Greetings, everyone. My name is Wayne Bush, creator of the website TrickedByTheLight.com, and it's been a few months since I last updated everyone. I've got a lot of cool new info to share, mostly regarding consciousness and what Carl Jung called the shadow archetype, as well as other archetypes. First, let me give a summary for those who may be unfamiliar with my website. Originally, I had placed some ideas I had based on intuition and from reading and listening to many authors over the years. Unfortunately, I didn't have as much evidence for my position when I appeared on some early podcasts. Since then, with the help of my good friend and research colleague Chris Hall, whose contributions are invaluable, I've really gathered much more evidence to corroborate my earlier position. This supporting evidence comes from many fields of research, including the following. Over 4,000 near-death experiences compiled by NDERF.org, the feedback of 16,000 out-of-body experiences compiled by author William Buhlman, between 4,000 and 6,000 psychedelic experiences compiled by Stanislav Grof and DMT researcher Rick Strassman, the historic writings of the first human civilization we know of, the Sumerians, the esoteric writings of religious groups such as the Gnostic Nag Hammadi Library and Pista Sophia, the Tibetan Book of the Dead by Buddhist monks, the Bible, great philosophers such as Plato and Socrates, the psychologist Carl Jung, various researchers in the ufology community such as David Jacobs, John Lear, Val Valerian, Carla Turner, Linda Moulton Howe, and others. The scientific research of Nikola Tesla, David Bohm, Carl Prebrim, and last but not least, dozens of emails I've received from readers and listeners around the world sharing their invaluable personal experiences. To briefly summarize, my position is that the energy of human souls is being farmed and harnessed by astral parasites who are ruled over by what are referred to as archons, who are the deceptive rulers who have perpetrated this con. They harness the light power of our soul to sustain their worlds and existence. They do this by convincing us to willingly do this via our consent to give away our power voluntarily. It is all illusion projected from the consciousness of our own true inner light. Our consciousness is like a movie projector. Later on, I will go over in detail how to win this game of life and go home to the true heavenly realms. But the main topic of this update is consciousness. I'd like to talk some about the nature of our prison first. The Gnostic text On the Origin of the World lays out a lot of it. It says, quote, "If you do not want him to be able to ruin our work, come let us create a man out of earth, according to the image of our body and according to the likeness of this being, to serve us, so that when he sees his likeness, he might become enamored of it. No longer will he ruin our work. Rather, we shall make those who are born out of the light our servants for all the duration of this eternal realm," end quote. Also, quote, "Now all this came to pass according to the forethought of Pistis, in order that man should appear after his likeness and should condemn them because of their mottled form. And their mottled form became an enclosure of the light. A prearranged plan came into effect regarding Eve so that the mottled forms of the authorities might become enclosures of the light, whereupon it would condemn them through their mottled forms. And it is they who are taken captive according to their destinies by the prime parent, and thus they were shut into the prisons of the mottled forms until the consummation of the age," end quote. I've previously mentioned how Gnostic texts say that the goddess of wisdom, Sophia, tried to create a likeness or image of the eternal light realms, but made a mistake or error. This error resulted in what was termed chaos in the creation of the Demiurge, who is the false god or creator of this world we live in. Says, quote, "After the natural structure of the immortal beings had completely developed out of the infinite, a likeness then emanated from Pistis. It is called Sophia, wisdom. It exercised volition and became a product resembling the primeval light. And immediately her will manifested itself as a likeness of heaven. Having an unimaginable magnitude, it was between the immortal beings and those things that came into being after them. She functioned as a veil dividing mankind from the things above," end quote. The texts say this was done without consulting her consort, the Ineffable Father. Thus the Demiurge was, quote, "without spirit," end quote. Or perhaps a way of saying it was an AI creation having consciousness but no soul. Maybe Sophia's error or mistake is a way of saying there was a loss of information or loss of coherence when she made a holographic copy of the Eternal Light Realms. More and more scientists these days are speaking out about the likelihood that we are living in a virtual reality or computer simulation. This loss of information or incompleteness would be a form of ignorance and delusion because it was not an accurate or complete replica. This is sort of how the Demiurge is described, as deluded and ignorant. And as Jung's allegory or metaphor of the shadow explains, could result in envy, jealousy, since those are qualities of someone who is insecure because they are lacking the knowledge or completeness, if you understand what I'm getting at. After all, what is chaos but scrambled, disorganized, incoherent information or disorder? The definition says chaos, noun, complete disorder and confusion, end quote. And maybe, just maybe, the light being in the near-death experience, which is Demiurge-related, does have missions for all us poor saps. The mission is for his sake. He is desperately trying to learn or gain that loss of knowledge when the holographic copy was made. So he sends us to gather info via all kinds of experiences so we can report back the info for his collective wisdom. Pleroma is the fullness or completeness. The holographic copy is not complete or full, has a loss of info or coherence, or is chaotic in a sense. Sophia means wisdom. She wasn't a she, but an androgynous power. So indeed wisdom is the power that escaped. Notice that her thought produced a copy. Her thought, just as our consciousness intent, produces things in the astral. I am Sophia, you are Sophia. When our wisdom came down to the material, we did not realize the Demiurge would steal our power and keep us fettered in the material. About a third of our consciousness is shattered by the counterfeit spirit. You lost some wisdom while here. You still won't have it all back until you go to a higher frequency. Just as Sophia was restored, so will we. We created this on behalf of the Demiurge without even knowing it. I'd like to read a couple of scientific quotes I put off the internet. One is, quote, for example, holograms appear three-dimensional because of the parallax that can be seen through the window of the hologram. Most holograms are recorded with coherent light, although some of the most commonly displayed holograms work in reflection and can be read without incoherent white light, end quote. Another one's, quote, the more pure the light, the greater the coherence length, end quote. So the ability to focus our brainwave state would determine how in focus or clear or out of focus, blurry, the holographic picture image is stored, or a loss in the intensity of focus or frequency could cause them to be fragmented like a corrupted digital picture. The idea that we are living in a simulation is gaining momentum as Elon Musk, Bank of America, and others have come forward with public statements. People are starting to wake up to the agenda of the Archons. There is a subreddit forum called Glitch where people are reporting glitches in the Matrix. One person wrote, quote, twice this week I've woken up and there's these goldeny, bronze, perfect geometrical grid lines in my vision for like 20 seconds, and then they disappear once I'm more awake, but they're there long enough for me to know I'm not dreaming. I went to the hospital last week and had scans and all kinds of tests done to make sure I don't have a brain tumor or anything. Everything came back clean, minus a little ear infection. Anyone else get this? Felt like it could be glitchy. Some of the replies were, quote, you're experiencing ascension symptoms, waking up from the matrix, or seeing beyond the veil, so to speak. The universe is made of frequencies, and perfect mathematical sequences as seen in sacred geometry and Fibonacci numbers. Check out Alex Gray's artwork, which shows what you are probably experiencing. Quote, another one, on LSD, I saw grid lines everywhere. I would look at an object and see the grid lines of the object's shape. I saw grid lines on my boyfriend's face, too, LOL. I didn't really think any of it, though. That stuff is fun, end quote. Another person said, quote, I had the same experience when I was on LSD, too. So trippy. Another one, quote, only just a few days ago. Weirdly enough, they were a glowing golden color, just as mentioned by OP. Definitely something to it, end quote. Another one said, quote, I get the same thing occasionally. For me, it starts as ones and zeros, fades into the lines, and then it fades into everything around me. It begs all kinds of weird questions, end quote. Another person said, quote, I've been seeing them for a few years. They kind of look like the light that comes in through window blinds. I've seen that myself. I've also noticed them recently while watching TV. Another one said, this is more common than you think. Considering this is a computer-projected universe, on occasion people can see through the illusion. Many young children have seen the frequency, fence, or energetic membrane that encircles the Earth. We are energetically locked into this slave reality, end quote. Some other people on the subreddit forum said, quote, the aliens that are controlling the simulation are called the Archons. They pretend to be angels, guides, ascended masters, lords of karma. Every human is judged by them and told they owe karmic debt and must return to the Earth school. The human then has their memory erased and are forced to reincarnate. This has been going on for a long time now and is complete slavery. Humans are used as energy slaves and seen as nothing more. Whether or not you choose to believe all this does not matter. Everyone is currently enslaved by the Archons, end quote. I don't know if they're getting this from my side or where they're getting it on. I know there's some other people talking about it, but it's encouraging that people are waking up to this. Another person wrote, quote, I have remembered at least four or five past lives through my dreams and meditation. I strongly believe that most, if not all of us, have been here many times before. My brother has a theory on what happens in the afterlife to also be part of this simulation and is set up to trick us into staying in the cycle of being reborn onto this earth to simply produce more and more energy, that we are those powerful beings that don't even realize our own full potentials, even in the immediate afterlife, and that you get a chance to try and figure it out each time you come back, and that there are other things, other beings controlling it all. So pretty much aliens, we will never know, end quote. Yet another person said, quote, it is absolutely a computer-simulated universe. Matter is actually holographic. The simulation is currently run by parasitic aliens called the Archons. They are parasites and are using humans as an energy source. To continue the enslavement, they have set up a complete con job in the astral afterlife. People are told they owe karmic debt and need more lessons. The human's memory is erased, and they are forced to reincarnate over and over. This has kept humans from ever advancing. In fact, most go backwards in development. The Archons see humans as cattle and nothing more. The entire simulation is actually an alien farm for harvesting energy, end quote. I've been talking about this for years. So another person said, quote, there is a Star Trek episode where they go to a holographic community that is unaware that they aren't real, end quote. So maybe our soul's light is broadcast like a signal outward. It's high frequency, still could be high frequency at its core or center. It could be that it slowed down as it travels outward, and the electromagnetic was built to keep us out and from getting back to the central core or the eternal light realms. So it's like there's the eternal light realms at the central core with a veil dividing it from the chaotic astral realms, and then there's an even longer signal here in the physical, and the entrainment is keeping our signal long and slow. David Icke's right in saying it's a vibrational prison. We think in terms of the soul being imprisoned inside an electromagnetic field around it, but maybe it's better to think in terms like we were kept outside and not able to go back inward. It's almost as if the eternal light realm soul signal transmission is getting jammed or interfered with by the electromagnetic field. Or our antenna receiver, maybe our DNA or whatever, has been broken or cut off. Like, most likely the only solution is death and stoppage of the heart, but maybe it could help to think in terms of waves and signal broadcasting. Here's a quote I found. It says, quote, another way to block a frequency is simply to encase it in a conductive substance. This is known as EMF shielding, end quote. What keeps us outside is our intent and attention. The power is an intent. By bringing it back inside, your power is internal. I want to talk about the Schumann resonance. I previously mentioned how all the energy we know is called the electromagnetic spectrum. Quote, the electromagnetic radiation is classified by wavelength into radio wave, microwave, radiation, terahertz radiation, infrared, the visible region that is perceived as light, ultraviolet, X-rays, and gamma rays. The behavior of EM radiation depends on its wavelength, end quote. So only an extremely tiny sliver of that continuum is the visible light we see and the audio we hear. These waves ejected by the sun in the form of coronal mass ejections reach the Earth and become part of the Earth's atmosphere. Our brain waves become entrained to a large degree by the resonance of the Earth and its atmosphere. Quote, the Schumann resonances are a set of spectrum peaks in the extremely low frequency portion of the Earth's electromagnetic field spectrum. Schumann resonances are global electromagnetic resonances, generated and excited by lightning discharges in the cavity formed by the Earth's surface and the ionosphere. The limited dimensions of the Earth cause this waveguide to act as a resonant cavity for electromagnetic waves in the ELF band. The cavity is naturally excited by electric currents and lightning. Schumann resonances are the principal background in the electromagnetic spectrum, beginning at 3 hertz and extending to 60 hertz, and appear as distinct peaks at extremely low frequencies around 7.83, which is fundamental, 14.3, 20.8, 27.3, and 33.8 hertz. In the normal mode descriptions of Schumann resonances, the fundamental mode is a standing wave in the Earth ionosphere cavity with a wavelength equal to the circumference of the Earth. This lowest frequency mode of the Schumann resonance occurs at a frequency of approximately 7.83 hertz, but this frequency can vary slightly from a variety of factors, such as solar-induced perturbations to the ionosphere, which compresses the upper wall of the closed cavity. Atmospheric electricity is the study of electrical charges in the Earth's atmosphere. The movement of charge between the Earth's surface, the atmosphere, and the ionosphere is known as the global atmospheric electrical circuit. Atmospheric electricity is an interdisciplinary topic involving concepts from electric statics, atmospheric physics, meteorology, and Earth science. Thunderstorms act as a giant battery in the atmosphere, charging up the ionosphere to about 400,000 volts with respect to the surface. This sets up an electric field throughout the atmosphere, which increases with altitude from about 100 volts per meter at the surface, end quote. Later I'm going to mention the limbic system, the thalamus and hippocampus surrounding the pineal. The brain would be most affected by frequency of the hippocampal region. The other surrounding fields around our body work like a magnetosphere, neutralizing outside frequency. I'm thinking the astroparasites are formed in the frequency of 7 hertz. They are the result of lightning and plasma, maybe, but I think our consciousness sits inside a complex array of fields. All cells create light. Here's an abstract I found. It says, in this paper, we argue that in addition to electrical and chemical signals propagating the neurons of the brain, signal propagation takes place in the form of biophoton production. This statement is supported by recent experimental confirmation of photon-guiding properties of a single neuron. We have investigated the interaction of mitochondrial biophotons with microtubules from a quantum mechanical point of view. Our theoretical analysis indicates that the interaction of biophotons and microtubules causes transitions or fluctuations of microtubules between coherent and incoherent states. Significant relationships between the fluctuation function of microtubules and alpha EEG diagrams is elaborated on in this paper. We argue that the role of biophotons in the brain merits special attention, end quote. Mitochondria use ATP and light and create energy, including biophotons. So sunlight comes in and biophoton goes out. If Earth life uses sunlight in this whole energy structure, then we are energy converters. We convert sunlight into biolight, which must be what is consumed by the parasites. The breakdown of ATP releases energy, and then sunlight is used to convert it back to ATP. Furthermore, biophoton research in blood reveals its holistic properties. Let me first explain how our soul and consciousness is imprisoned here. When a baby develops its heart, it creates an extensive electromagnetic field around it. This field of the heart is what keeps the soul imprisoned in the body. It is electromagnetic forces, not physical ones, that hold the soul in the body. Our soul or consciousness is imprisoned because of the electromagnetic field of the heart. Electricity is generated when a magnet is rotated, so the iron that circulates in our blood, due to the heart's pumping, keeps us imprisoned, but also the spinning of the iron core of the earth with a low frequency of 7.83 hertz. By chaining us to low frequency, we sit at basically a tranquilized state trying to wake up from it. It's a very low frequency, but not completely dead. We do produce electricity. When the heart stops, the electromagnetic field dissolves, and so the soul is no longer bound within and is released. The heart, being a huge electrical producer and filled with iron, makes it a biochemical motor. The heart stops and then stops producing electricity, which causes the fields to slowly fail until you can't escape. So our soul fell in consciousness and is being held within our electromagnetic field. It dawned on me that the symbol people draw for the heart, the one that looks like a, I don't know, with the cleft at the top, anyway, but at least the top portion is representing the toroidal field of the heart torus. The European Fusion Network Information website has an article entitled, quote, Plasma Confinement by Magnetic Fields, end quote, which states, quote, Left to itself, a plasma, like a gas, will occupy all the geometrical space available because of the collisions between the particles. Magnetic fields can confine a plasma because the ions and electrons of which it consists will follow helical paths around the magnetic field lines. If a vessel containing plasma is placed in a rectilinear magnetic field, the particles of plasma cannot reach the sidewalls, but they will strike the ends of the vessel. To prevent the particles from coming into contact with the material walls in this way, two types of magnetic configuration have been studied, end quote. And one of these two types is a toroidal configuration. It says, quote, toroidal configurations in which the risk of losses is removed by curving the magnetic lines around to form a closed loop. Theoretical study of particle trajectories show that if the particles are to be confined, the toroidal field must have superimposed upon it a field component perpendicular to it, that is a toroidal field. The force lines of the total field thus become spiral paths along and around which the plasma particles are guided, end quote. Is it just a coincidence that both the Earth and the heart's electromagnetic fields form the shape of a torus? In my opinion, this plays a vital role in keeping our souls imprisoned here. There are five categories of brainwave states, ranging from delta waves, which are the slowest, to gamma waves, which are the fastest, highest frequency. The lowest category are delta waves, which are between 0.1 and 3 hertz and are associated with detached awareness or deep sleep or deep hypnosis. Beta is the next class above that and ranges from 4 to 7 hertz. This is the state of meditation, although this state can be used to reach the higher gamma state. Alpha state is the next one up from theta and is 8 to 13 hertz. This is a state of relaxation or light hypnosis, such as when one is driving a car and the brain is on autopilot. The next stage up is beta and is 14 to 30 hertz. This is our normal everyday waking state of awareness. The highest state is gamma and is 31 to 100 hertz. This is associated with peak focus or concentration, insight, and expanded consciousness. Now notice those wavelengths correspond directly to the Schumann resonance, which goes up to 100 hertz. Gamma waves are the fastest of the brainwave frequencies and signify the highest state of focus possible. They are associated with peak concentration and the brain's optimal frequency for cognitive functioning. Meditation slows the brain waves, which may be good for our bodies to combat our normal hectic lives and eliminate stress, but I would prefer to reach the higher frequency of brain waves, the gamma waves, for insight and expanded consciousness. I don't sit down to meditate. When I think, I block all else and visualize everything. The state I'm in is gamma or close. It's excitement of thinking about some subjects that like creates an excitation across my mind. You take in more facts and see more details. Now, those who meditate with nothing are the theta meditation, two different effects. Here's an article, quote, experiments on Tibetan Buddhist monks have shown a correlation between transcendental mental states and gamma waves. A suggested explanation is based on the fact that the gamma is intrinsically localized. Neuroscientists suggest this is a very existence of synchronized gamma indicates that something akin to a singularity, or to be more prosaic, a conscious experience is occurring. This work adduces experimental and simulated data to show that what meditation masters have in common is the ability to put the brain into a state in which it is maximally sensitive. As mentioned above, gamma waves have been observed in Tibetan Buddhist monks. A 2004 study took 8 long-term Tibetan Buddhist practitioners of meditation and using electrodes, monitored the patterns of electrical activity produced by their brains as they meditated. The researchers compared the brain activity of the monks to a group of novice meditators. In a normal meditative state, both groups were shown to have similar brain activity. However, when the monks were told to generate an objective feeling of compassion during meditation, their brain activity began to fire in a rhythmic, coherent manner, suggesting neuronal structures were firing in harmony. This was observed at a frequency of 25 to 40 hertz, the rhythm of gamma waves. These gamma band oscillations in the monks' brain signals were the largest seen in humans, apart from those in states such as seizures. Conversely, these gamma band oscillations were scant in novice meditators, though a number of rhythmic signals did appear to strengthen in beginner meditators with further experience in the exercise, implying that the aptitude for one to produce gamma band rhythm is trainable. Such evidence and research in gamma band oscillations may explain the heightened sense of consciousness, bliss, and intellectual acuity subsequent to meditation. Notably, meditation is known to have a number of health benefits, stress reduction, mood elevation, and increased life expectancy of the mind in its cognitive functions. The current Dalai Lama meditates for 4 hours each morning, and he says it's hard work. He elaborates that if neuroscience can construct a way in which he can reap the psychological and biological rewards of meditation without going through the practice each morning, he would be apt to adopt the innovation. End quote. So some meditators who become blissed out, that may not be the optimal state to be in all the time, especially when awake in everyday activity. Their meditating may be against their best interest. Sure, it's good not to get too emotional over all the drama in life and react in an emotional way, but to not at all be completely dispassionate seems almost dead to me in a sense. A more alert hyperbrain state such as gamma waves could provide a more laser-like focus and be better all around because you still don't need to react emotionally. To think in gamma state, block all else and visualize everything. It's excitement of thinking about some subjects. It creates expectation. You take in more facts, see more details. If one has no thoughts, it's like stasis. One can use that state to jump higher towards gamma to gain insight and intuition. Max Planck in 1931 said, quote, I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing postulates consciousness. He also said, as a man who has devoted his whole life to the most clear-headed science, to the study of matter, I can tell you as a result of my research about atoms this much. There is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system and the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. End quote. I found my consciousness, which is the same as yours and everyone else, is a hologram maker itself. Deep inside is that little light speck that is spectacular beyond words. It is the most amazing thing you will come across, and it is you. Anyway, this light is very, very powerful. So it had what I call working memory, meaning the cognizant things you have remembered in this life. So with memories and with imagination, this light can make videos, images, pictures, but they are all holograms. The good kind, as long as they originate inside and are not the intrusive kind that are the manipulation of the archons. In your mind, you see the intrusive image, and because you thought it was yours, you put focus enough to have in it your memory. So you compared the image in your memory, and then it brought up comparable images, which allowed you to give the analogy. If you never gave the image attention, it would just have faded away with no effect. It's the only way I know of to combat them, because the illusion comes from an external source. The point is that the consciousness operates like a transmitter-receiver. It transmits or makes an image for you to see. If you receive an image externally, it is your consciousness showing the image, but it's just the data that it translates to an image. It does not discriminate, but we have a hard time in the body separating all these different streams of images. A good example of images you see is seeing things with your mind's eye or imagination. It's your consciousness making those images, and it is watching them. So know your light power, your supra-consciousness, is operating as it should, and you have to discard any images that are not yours if they serve no positive purpose. Pretend like it's graffiti on the wall or just pay no attention to it. Our consciousness may be like the laser light that produces holograms. Will Hart, in his summary on NDEs, wrote, quote, this brings up the possibility that consciousness may operate like a holographic projector. Alternatively, that pure consciousness is entirely holographic. We know that the hologram we see is not really three-dimensional, but knowing that does not stop it from appearing to be so, end quote. I'd like to talk about some about the brain, the pineal gland, DMT, melatonin, and the hippocampus, and amygdala and such. This episode of Limitless I just watched was about a bacteria that feeds off electricity or electrons, and it's based on a real life form here. The episode of Limitless revealed the fact that there are creatures who feed off of electrons and electricity, which is similar to the idea there could be astral parasites that feed off the human aura for energy. A New Scientist article called, quote, meet the electric life forms that live on pure energy. Unlike any life on Earth, any other life on Earth, these extraordinary bacteria use energy in its purest form. They eat and breathe electrons, and they are everywhere. The article hints that there being some substance to that claim. The article appeared in print under the headline, "The Electricity Eaters." The article starts out, quote, "Stick an electrode in the ground, pump electrons down it, and they will come. Living cells that eat electricity. We have known bacteria to survive on a variety of energy sources, but none as weird as this. Think of Frankenstein's monster, brought to life by galvanic energy, except these electric bacteria are very real and are popping up all over the place. Like any other living thing on Earth, electric bacteria use energy in its purest form, naked electricity in the shape of electrons harvested from rocks and metals. We already knew about two types. Now biologists are showing that they can entice many more out of rocks and marine mud by tempting them with a bit of electrical juice. Experiments growing bacteria on battery electrodes demonstrate that these novel, mind-boggling forms of life are essentially eating and excreting electricity. That should not come as a complete surprise. We know that life, when you boil it right down, is a flow of electrons. You eat sugars that have excess electrons, and you breathe in oxygen that willingly takes them. Our cells break down the sugars, and the electrons flow through them in a complex set of chemical reactions until they are passed on to electron-hungry oxygen. In the process, cells make ATP, a molecule that acts as an energy storage unit for almost all living things. Moving electrons around is a key part of making ATP. Life's very clever, he says. He says it figures out how to suck electrons out of everything we eat and keep them under control. In most living things, the body packages the electrons up into molecules that can safely carry them through the cells until they're dumped onto oxygen. That's the way we make all our energy, and it's the same for every organism on this planet. Electrons must flow in order for energy to be gained. This is why when someone suffocates another person, they are dead within minutes. You have stopped the supply of oxygen, so the electrons can no longer flow. The discovery of electric bacteria shows that some very basic forms of life can do away with sugary middlemen and handle the energy in its purest form, the electrons, harvested from the surface of minerals. So, if there's energy, there's some, end quote. If there's energy, there's something consuming it. And this points to astral parasites being absolutely logical. According to a Live Science article entitled "Strange, Humans Glow Invisible Light," says, quote, "The human body literally glows, emitting a visible light in extremely small quantities at levels that rise and fall with the day, scientists now reveal. Past research has shown that the body emits visible light, 1,000 times less intense than the levels to which our naked eyes are sensitive. In fact, virtually all living creatures emit very weak light, which is thought to be a byproduct of biochemical reactions involving free radicals," end quote. According to another article entitled "Biophotons, the Human Body Emits, Communicates with, and is Made from Light," end quote, says, quote, "Given the sheer insanity of our existential condition and bodily incarnation as a whole, and considering that our earthly existence is partially formed from sunlight and requires the continual consumption of condensed sunlight in the form of food, it may not sound so far-fetched that our body emits light. Indeed, the human body emits biophotons, also known as ultra-weak photon emissions, UPE, with a visibility 1,000 times lower than the sensitivity of our naked eye. While not visible to us, these particles of light, or waves, depending on how you're measuring them, are part of the visible electromagnetic spectrum and are detectable via sophisticated modern instrumentation," end quote. The abstract of the Journal of Cell Science research article called, quote, "Light-harvesting chlorophyll pigments enable mammalian mitochondria to capture photonic energy and produce ATP," reports the results on light-driven ATP synthesis and proposes, quote, "Sunlight's the most abundant energy source on this planet. However, the ability to convert sunlight into biological energy in the form of ATP is thought to be limited to chlorophyll-containing chloroplasts and photosynthetic organisms. Here we show that mammalian mitochondria can also capture light and synthesize ATP when mixed with a light-capturing metabolite of chlorophyll, the same metabolite fed to the worm." Can I even attempt to pronounce that? "Leads to increase in ATP synthesis upon light exposure, along with an increase in lifespan. We further demonstrate the same potential to convert light into energy exists in mammals, as chlorophyll metabolites accumulate in mice, rats, and swine when fed a chlorophyll-rich diet," end quote. I'd like to, for a while, delve more deeply into the science of how the true superconsciousness of our soul is artificially held down and regulated by the brain. There's a governor or a regulator in our brain which keeps the frequency from going higher and helps to keep us dumbed down and asleep. Keep in mind the Sumerian texts say humans were scientifically engineered upgrades to the indigenous primitive man that already existed on Earth for the purpose of being worker slaves for the Anuna gods. So they wanted us to be intelligent enough to take orders, but not smart enough to overthrow them. The Gnostic text on the origin of the world says, quote, "Since that day, the seven rulers have fashioned man with his body resembling their body, but his likeness resembling the man that had appeared to them. This modeling took place by parts, one at a time, and their leader fashioned the brain and the nervous system," end quote. So I'm going to be talking for a while about the design of the brain and brain state. So if this is not your cup of tea, you can jump ahead in the audio or skip down the page some. Quote, the modern human brain is three times larger in volume than those of the great apes. More importantly, the human brain to body size ratio is significantly larger, and it has a much bigger cerebral cortex with a higher concentration of neurons. The cerebral cortex plays a key role in memory, attention, perception, awareness, thought, language, and consciousness. Where we depart from our animal brethren is in the great development of the frontal part of our cerebral cortex, the frontal lobes, and the greater proportion of cerebral tissue called association areas, which integrate the information obtained from the regions that directly receive sensory information. These latter regions are called the primary sensory and motor areas because they receive simple, pure sensations and direct the body movement of the body. It is within the frontal lobes that we humans mull over the past, prepare for the future, and reflect on its implications. Animals do not have this last capability in particular as far as we can discern. Animals prepare for the future in a limited, instinct-driven way. Think of squirrels gathering and burying nuts for the winter. Higher-level thinking is supported by the frontal lobes. Activity in those lobes allows us to reason, make judgments, make plans for the near and far future, make choices, take action, solve problems, and generally control our living environment. Your personality lives in the frontal lobes, where emotions, problem-solving, reasoning, planning, and other functions are managed. The frontal lobes are linked to sensory and memory centers throughout the brain. The frontal lobes are responsible for empathic behavior, allowing us to understand the thinking and experiences of others. The frontal lobe contains most of the dopamine-sensitive neurons in the cerebral cortex. The dopamine system is associated with reward, attention, short-term memory tasks, planning, and motivation. Dopamine tends to limit and select sensory information arriving from the thalamus to the forebrain, end quote. So another quote says, the brain reward center addictive drugs provide a shortcut to the brain's reward system by flooding the nucleus accumbens with dopamine. The hippocampus lays down memories of this rapid sense of satisfaction, and the amygdala creates a conditioned response to certain stimuli, end quote. Here's a quote. Theta waves generate the theta rhythm, a neural oscillatory pattern in EEG signals recorded either from inside the brain or from electrodes glued to the scalp. Two types of theta rhythm have been described. The hippocampal theta rhythm is a strong oscillation that can be observed in the hippocampus and other brain structures in numerous species of mammals, including rodents, rats, dogs, cats, bats, and marsupials. EEG oscillations in the 4 to 7 hertz frequency range, end quote. That might be good for our brain, but not our consciousness. It has been demonstrated theta rhythm equals no memory and not operating at full capacity. But what causes our current waking beta state, which is 14 hertz? Most likely hippocampal oscillations. We were born theta dominant, and it rises, giving us more memories. Theta, 4 to 8 hertz, dominant to alpha, 8 to 13 dominant frequency, occurs in the brain from childhood. Quote, beta wave or beta rhythm is the term used to designate the frequency range of human brain activity between 12.5 and 30 hertz. Beta states are the states associated with normal waking consciousness, end quote. The average frequency of the first Schumann mode is 7.8 hertz. The average frequency of the second Schumann mode is 14.1 hertz. Quote, as soon as a higher amplitude frequency is introduced, the biological organism will attempt to entrain or tune itself to this louder signal. It's called FFR, or the brain's frequency following response, end quote. It's a matter of entrainment that oscillates the hippocampal pineal region. There's a 1999 paper by Wolfgang Klimesch entitled EEG Alpha and Theta Oscillations Reflect Cognitive and Memory Performance. which clearly indicates that the hippocampal EEG dominance directly relates to cognition. It means consciousness is tied to this. It may be able to vibrate a higher frequency on its own, but is usually entrained back down to the brain frequency. All categories of brains, which were theta dominant, are at low cognition and often in the 7 hertz range. Shadow beings seem to be primarily in the 7 hertz area, just below waking consciousness. The other surrounding fields around our body work like a magnetosphere, neutralizing outside frequency. The astral parasites are formed in the frequency of 7 hertz. Sleep deprivation causes people to see shadow people. Again, after being tired, your hippocampal starts to stay just above consciousness and at the frequency of shadow people. Stress, depression, and anxiety also cause you to be in that low frequency. They're often seen hovering over a sleeping person, whispering in the ear. It's easier to affect the mind at the lower brain state and also to suggest an image to a dreaming mind that will cause a bad dream, which they can then feed from. These categories all see shadow people constantly. Alzheimer's, small children, dementia, sleep deprivation, a hypnagogic state, or sleep paralysis. They live off the power of intent thought. There is more light in intent. Most of these intents are outside the body, for example, in the of someone else. We project all that out of us, and they consume it. I'd like to read a bit about the thalamus from Wikipedia. It says, quote, the thalamus is a part of the brain that has several functions, such as relaying of sensory and motor skills to the cerebral cortex, and the regulation of consciousness, sleep, and alertness. It is a midline symmetrical structure of two halves within the vertebrate brain, situated between the cerebral cortex and the midbrain. The thalamus is connected to the spinal cord via the spinothalamic tract. It may be thought of as a kind of hub of information. Particularly, every sensory system includes a thalamic nucleus that receives sensory signals and sends them to the associated primary cortical area. The thalamus also plays an important role in regulating states of sleep and wakefulness. Thalamic nuclei has strong reciprocal connections with the cerebral cortex, forming thalamocortico-thalamic circuits that are believed to be involved with consciousness. The thalamus plays a major role in regulating arousal, the level of awareness, and activity. Damage to the thalamus could lead to permanent coma. The thalamus is functionally connected to the hippocampus as part of the extended hippocampal system, the thalamic interior nuclei, with respect to spatial memory and spatial sensory datum. They are crucial for human episodic memory and rodent event memory, end quote. And comparisons to the Eye of Horus have been made. You look at the similarity in the shape and structure. Quote, the limbic system is a set of brain structures located on both sides of the thalamus, immediately beneath the cerebrum. It has also been referred to as the paleomammalian cortex. It is not a separate system, but a collection of structures from the, I can read those three things. I guess I'll skip down. But the thalamus and the limbic system, the hippocampus is processing, the cognitive memory, and the amygdala is generating these emotions. So it's a means of controlling us. Here's another quote. Spontaneous revoked brain activity in the hippocampus showed a 20 to 70 hertz beta rhythm under some conditions, typically during behavioral activation and accompanied by a theta rhythm. Beta rhythms are generally located, perhaps by recurrent feedback loop involving being pyramidal cells and inhibitory interneurons. Modulation of the local circuit rhythm by cholinergic inputs has also been demonstrated. Rhythms in the gamma range and the beta range are found in many parts of the nervous system and are associated with attention, perception, and cognition. I don't know, I guess I've made my point. we'll skip on down here past a lot of this. The brain is like a symphony, but they all maintain similar due to entrainment. Emotions is what affects the consciousness directly. Quote, when the amygdala's connections to the R complex, or reptile brain, are activated, fight or flight and basic reactionary survival processes occur in brain body. The slang for this is clicking backward. It is primary and basic and automatic. When cortex and frontal lobes processes overcome the limitations of the reactive reptile brain, the slang is clicking the amygdala forward. The brain rewards certain enhanced survival behaviors with pleasure, And this patterning of learned positive behavior involves the amygdala and its connections to the forward prefrontal cortex. This can be done consciously and deliberately. The brain's advanced electric circuits are controlled with thought. To illustrate why our consciousness does not operate at full capacity, I would refer to the effects of infrasound on the human. It is supported that certain low frequencies basically paralyze us, and although affecting the brain, low frequency has the same effect on our consciousness, causing it to basically suspend animation at low frequencies. And there's this guy, Ryan Littlefield, who wrote a lot about the psychoacoustic effects of the infrasonic frequencies, you know, that the military experimented on with and showed a lot of, especially 7 hertz was like the key frequency when we were at our highest vulnerability. He says, quote, the frequency that is thought to be most dangerous to humans is between 7 hertz and 8 hertz. This is a resonant frequency of flesh, and theoretically it can rupture internal organs if loud enough. 7 hertz is also the average frequency of the brain's alpha rhythms. Thus, this frequency has been described as dangerous but also relaxing. Whether exposure to such infrasound can trigger epileptic seizures, as some fear, remains unclear. So it's apparent that a frequency sitting around 7 hertz has been widely discussed as changing a subject emotional state when exposed. And there's been other studies that have been done to support that. There's some more stuff on the DMT. Here's some quotes of people that had DMT experiences. He says, quote, the entity explained that it existed in another dimension so that it could feed off of human thought unhindered. I got the feeling that the relationship wasn't symbiotic. Perhaps these thought drainers somehow sucked life energy from humans along with the mental energy. It claimed that it was the psychic equivalent of an actual insect that feeds on blood, skin, etc., with regard to the extent of any damage it might do to those on whom it fed, end quote. Another DMT experiences, quote, the horrible weird things didn't stop. I started to realize I had already done this before and had this exact same trip as though I was living this all again and was angry at myself for smoking the DMT again. I somewhat gained control of my mind again, but I was affected. The things that happened seemed to show there was no way reality is real. The fact that the song I chose correlated with my experience where I was remembering I'd done all this before, with the song looping life, remembering life, I see no way how things can be real. None of this felt fake. It felt more real than anything before, and this makes me sad. I started coming up with ideas that maybe the Bible was true and I was possessed by some sort of demon convincing me of these bad things, or maybe it was a different part of me that felt like part of me that creates my dreams was controlling it, and maybe I was just insane, end quote. Another person said, quote, the entities begin to fade away. Everything around me turns white, and I feel almost as if I'm zooming backwards through a tunnel. In front of me, I begin to see a large blue eye, just like the ones on the Byzantine faces, but with lotus-like blue eyelashes emerging from its pupil. The eye was strangely beautiful, had a distinctly feminine presence, and I could sense it radiating an intelligence far beyond my own. Upon entering hyperspace, I perceived myself falling through a tunnel in zero gravity at light speed. Then once again, I penetrated a bubble membrane and was in what I refer to as the dome, or the control panel. Only this time, instead of a perceived octopoid redirecting my awareness to various structures, there was this huge gelatinous hexagonal Rubik's Cube type machine that would reform itself into structures according to these progressive harmonic tones that permeated my reality, causing various emotions to emerge. In addition, it was redirecting my attention to various intersections of its restructured embodiment, end quote. This one with DPH. Several people I know had been into using DPH recreationally for a while. Experiences all started out pleasant enough. However, they all abruptly stopped at one point or another after reaching, quote, a land where humans don't belong, quote. This place is inhabited by shadow people. Despite all their warnings, I felt I had to see this phenomenon to believe it. I began to notice movements in my peripheral vision. It appeared as if several bugs were flying about the room, except for that they disappeared when I turned my head. By the time the movie is halfway over, the movements are more pronounced. I am seeing what appear to be clear straight lines, straw-like things, if you will, floating across my vision. I remember this from previous trips. I begin to experience audio hallucinations. The first was a beeping sound. I thought it came from the microwave, but it could not have been because I was unplugged. A moment later, I hear a loud dog bark come from the direction of my kitchen. The straw things continue to multiply. The straw things have merged together to form giant clear amoeba blobs. Oh, good, I think it's the amoebas. I'm not sure why I was happy to see them. I hear voices. The voices don't scare me. I am able to tell that they are not real, usually, after listening to them for a few minutes. Everything seems basically normal, save for the amoebas. They follow me in here, I guess. And then, a movement. No, a man. No, shadows. One is very tall and thin, wearing something that resembled a KKK hood. He moves fluidly and smoothly, raising his legs high with each step. He approaches my sister's bed and stands there to study her. The other is child-sized and scurries up the wall like Spider-Man when it notices me looking at it. It tilts its head back to look at me, and I see it has dull yellow eyes and is a Cheshire cat grin like a black hole. Man has no eyes that I can see. I'm not really frightened. I'm mildly curious, but mainly exhausted. Every time I close my eyes, I feel a pinch in the crook of my arm, just like the pinch when they insert an IV needle into that vein. I am annoyed with the creatures now. They won't let me sleep. Somehow I just know it is them that's pinching me. How did they do this from across the room? I don't know. Why are they here again? Oh, that's right. I vaguely remember taking some kind of drug. DPH. Why did I take it, I wonder? This is no fun. I'm sweating and I feel sick every time I roll over and I am tired. I feel compelled suddenly to get up and flush the rest of the pills down the toilet. I do so and then return. The shadow people are now gone and I can have some much needed rest. He says, note, after researching the subject, it has become apparent that shadow people are not something new. Sightings have been reported for hundreds of years among all types of people, sober as well as drug-induced. Children seem to be especially sensitive to them. Many people report feelings of dread along with their presence. They are said to feed off this negative energy. Mine, however, did not seem menacing at all. Perhaps I did not venture far enough into their realm. Perhaps I just met some friendly ones. Looking back, I believe I could have communicated with them by thinking. I also think I could have put my hands right through them. There are several different theories for what these beings truly are. I have my own theories, but I'll leave it up to you to fantasize about your own. Is it possible they are figments of the imagination? Possibly. Usually I myself am a skeptic of these matters. However, thousands of people sharing the same hallucination, sober people, children, not likely, end quote. Speaking of drugs, I'm going to read a few quotes from Jim Morrison, the lead singer of The Doors. He was a poet and a songwriter. But since we're on the topic of psychedelics and these shadow people and stuff like that, I'm going to read a few that he wrote. He says, events take place beyond our knowledge or control. Our lives are lived for us. We can only try to enslave others, but gradually special perceptions are being developed. The idea of the Lords is beginning to form in some. We should enlist them into bands of perceivers to tour the labyrinth during their mysterious nocturnal appearances. The Lords have secret entrances, and they know disguises, but they give themselves away in minor ways. Too much glint of light in the eye, a wrong gesture, too long and curious a glance. The Lords appease us with images. They give us books, concerts, galleries, shows, cinemas, especially the cinemas. Through art, they confuse us and blind us to our enslavement. Art adorns our prison walls, keeps us silent and diverted and indifferent. He says, these mutants, blood meal for the plant that's plowed. They are waiting to take us into the severed garden. You know how pale and wanton thrillful comes death in a strange hour, unannounced, unplanned, for like a scaring, over-friendly guest you've brought to bed? Death makes angels of us all and gives us wings where we had shoulders smooth as raven's claws. No more money, no more fancy dress. This other kingdom seems by far the best until its other jaw reveals incest and loose obedience to a vegetable law. I will not go. Prefer a feast of friends to the giant family. He says, death is a good disguise for late at night, wrapping all games in its calm garden. To call up the godheads, spirits, demons, the shaman calls when radio dark night. We are eating each other. The voice of the serpent, dry hiss of age and steam and leaves of gold, old books and ruined temples, the pages break like ash. Oh, by the way, Jim Morrison's father was a admiral, so here's a big connection with the creation of the music industry, especially the Doors, Grateful Dead. It's for another topic for another day. But he says, speak in secret alphabets. I light another cigarette. Learn to forget. Let me sleep all night in your soul kitchen. Here's one. He says, thank you, O Lord, for the white blind light. Thank you, O Lord, for the white blind light. The city rises from the sea. I had a splitting headache from which the future is made. End quote. He says, a vast radiant beach and a cool jeweled moon. Couples race naked down by its quiet side, and we laugh like soft, mad children, snug in the woolly cotton brains of infancy. The music and voices are all around us. Choose, they croon, the ancient ones. The time has come again. Choose now, they croon, beneath the moon, beside an ancient lake. Enter again the sweet forest. Enter the hot dream. Come with us. Everything is broken up and dances. End quote. Quote, there's danger on the edge of town. Ride the king's highway, baby. Weird scenes inside the gold mine. Ride the highway west, baby. Ride the snake to the lake, the ancient lake, baby. The snake is long, 7 miles. Ride the snake. He's old and his skin is cold. The west is the best. Get here and we'll do the rest. The blue bus is calling us. Driver, where are you taking us? He says another one. Let's swim to the moon. Let's climb through the tide. Surrender the waking world that laps against our side. Nothing left open and no time to decide. We'll stop onto a river on our moonlight drive. Come on, baby, gonna take a little ride. He says, not to touch the earth, not to see the sun. Nothing left to do but run, run, run. Let's run. House upon the hill, moon is lying still. Some outlaws live by the side of a lake. The minister's daughter's in love with a snake. He lives in a well by the side of the road. Wake up, girl, we're almost home. Come on, we should see the gates by morning. We should be inside by evening. Sun, 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 burn, burn, burn. Soon, 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 moon, moon, moon. I will get you soon, soon, soon. Let the carnival bells ring. Let the serpents sing. I am the lizard king. I can do anything. He says, at first flash of Eden, we race down to the sea, standing there on freedom's shore, waiting for the sun, waiting for the sun, waiting for the sun. Can you feel it now? Or can you feel it now that spring has come, that it's time to live in the scattered sun? He says, I'm a changeling. See me change. I'm a changeling. You got to see me change. And this last one, he says, we are like actors, turned loose in this world to wander in search of a phantom, endlessly searching for a half-formed shadow of our lost reality. When others demand that we become the people they want us to be, they force us to destroy the person we really are. It's a subtle kind of murder. The most loving parents and relatives commit this murder with smiles on their faces. End quote. So I'm going to talk a little about NDEs, near-death experiences, and what they say about consciousness. These near-death experiences reveal that a soul sheds its physical body in lower animal everyday normal waking consciousness, or ego, and experiences the afterlife with the true expanded consciousness, or awareness of its soul, which is described as pure consciousness. Souls experience a state of supra-consciousness whether they go to the light or not. I've talked to NDEers who felt the love, and they never even went through the tunnel or entered the light. It is the natural state of our soul, and being free from the physical body, which is yoked to an animal brain and counterfeit the spirit. I'd like to read some examples of what NDEers had to say about consciousness as a result of their NDE. Matilda M. said, consciousness remained totally alert, linked to this luminous flow to such an extent that it dissolved in it. I was this refined, sublime consciousness. It bathed in the conscious energy and simultaneously was wide open, limitless, as if it had contained the universe space. It perceived, felt, had all the properties of a living being, but acted in a dimension located out of matter and out of time. End quote. Roger F. said, they asked him, what time during the experience were you at your highest level of consciousness and alertness? He said, sense of expanded consciousness was immediate. Full expansion and understanding followed within an eternal instant. He asked him, how did your highest level of consciousness and alertness during the experience compare to your normal everyday consciousness and alertness? He said, more consciousness and alertness than normal, end quote. Bruce C. Said, it was a totally different type of consciousness. It was without any constraints. Zachary G. said, I was aware only of the pure consciousness of beings melding with each other, directly communicating, I suppose, by a sort of intuition. Jeff C. said, quote, I know my identity is an eternal existence now. I would no longer call it consciousness. It is a self-identity separate from consciousness, more like a super-consciousness, end quote. Becca D. said, I was in a dark void. I was not scared. It was like I was a pair of eyes and ears with pure consciousness. It was so real, end quote. Tamara J. said, more consciousness and alertness than normal. I was free of the fears, ideas, and limitations of this earth. I had total peace and could give all my attention to what was happening. Tony M. said, I was simply a form of consciousness with my ego intact. I did not have to breathe, nor did I have any difficulty thinking, as though I was experiencing some sort of super consciousness. Myra S. said, I realized that the real goal of the mind created life game in life was to remove the veil of delusion and ignorance and reach the ultimate truth of one's reality and life itself. Nancy R. said, as I was struck, I realized that my consciousness was in two places simultaneously. One part, very scared and animal-like, was firmly inside of my broken body that was stuck on the vehicle's axis and being dragged under the truck. The other part, a very calm, dispassionate observer, hovered out in front of the truck and off to the south, watching the whole scene unfold from a distance. This dual consciousness seemed quite normal to the observer part of me. The observer was calm about the whole thing, and I remember the feeling that this was all happening for a reason, that there was nothing to fear. The observer me watched as witnesses stopped, called for help, and as the paramedics arrived. When the paramedics started working on me, my two selves came back together, end quote. Julio M. said, I believe it is closer to the concept of a matrix or ultra-supercomputer than to Christ or Buddha. Our experience was definitely real. Always, from the first moment, I experienced it as real. I had complete consciousness. Scott W. said, I saw that we have created false truths and realities because we loathe what we think is the truth. We have nearly, if not completely, ruined our lives, minds, and souls to keep feeding the illusions. We keep this false love and reality alive just to do it. Nancy H. said, although my body looked unconscious, my mind spirit was hyper-aware. Phoebe, who had a spiritually transformative experience, said, the ego is a false self that can only dominate if it's unconscious, if there is a lack of awareness. It's not who we fundamentally are. It has no foundation in reality. Although some stages of healthy human development are ego-centered, the ego is ultimately an illusion of the mind. I was not seeing with my eyes, but with the core of my being. I saw our universe, all physical space, all other universes, and everything that changes is one tiny, dark, finite speck surrounded by an infinite sea of life and light. I saw even more clearly life's nature of pure love, bliss, creativity, and wisdom. This sea of pure life is formless and spacious, and yet is fully conscious and intelligent. It is the only true experiencer, the only true I. The source is present everywhere and in every moment, whether we are aware of it or not. As this great being showed him, herself to me, I could see that the pure divine life that is him, her, is the same life that is the essence of every being through all space and time. An image of a meditating Buddha came to me, and I knew that I was the spacious consciousness, the luminous light of presence, permeating the cosmos and coming through the Buddha. Though we can create whatever illusions we want in our minds for as long as we wish and act on them too, end quote. Janine E., just a couple more. Janine said, our unconscious mind holds information that our conscious mind interferes with. Having a near-death experience allows the unconscious mind to be accessed. And once the conscious mind is not blocking our unconscious mind, we're able to see the truth more clearly. It's like having the third eye awakened or a spiritual awakening. End quote. Brian T. said, I knew it had not been any sort of dream. In fact, it was far more real than normal waking consciousness. End quote. So I'm going to talk about the luminous mind. You could tell how the near-death experiences talked about two different sets of consciousnesses, one which is like human and our animal consciousness, and another that's like a supra-consciousness. So Buddhists refer to the supra-consciousness as the luminous mind. The Buddha states, quote, luminous monks is the mind, and it is defiled by incoming defilements. The discourses indicate that the mind's natural radiance can be made manifest by meditation. Ajahn Mun, the leading figure behind the modern Thai forest tradition, comments on this verse. The mind is something more radiant than anything else can be, but because counterfeits, passing defilements, come and obscure it, it loses its radiance, like the sun when obscured by clouds. Don't go thinking that the sun goes after the clouds. Instead, the clouds come drifting along and obscure the sun. So meditators, when they know in this manner, should do away with these counterfeits by analyzing them shrewdly. When they develop the mind to the stage of the primal mind, this will mean that all counterfeits are destroyed, or rather, counterfeit things won't be able to reach into the primal mind, because the bridge making the connection will have been destroyed. Even though the mind may then still have to come into contact with the preoccupations of the world, its contact will be like that of a bead of water rolling over a lotus leaf, end quote. Here's a quote that says, even the slightest development of loving kindness is of great benefit. This implies that loving kindness and the related state of compassion is inherent within the luminous mind as a basis for its further development. The observation that the ground state of consciousness is of the nature of loving kindness implies that empathy is innate to the consciousness and exists prior to the emergence of all active mental processes. End quote. Some quotes from the Buddha. He says, no one saves us but ourselves. No one can and no one may. We ourselves must walk the path. He says, peace comes within. Do not seek it without. Here's a quote from Naropa, who says, the self-knowing cannot possibly form thoughts without conceptualizing a mind, since it is not something to be conceived. This original wakefulness, cognizant yet thought-free, is like the wisdom of the Tathagata. Therefore, it's taught, realize that luminous mind is the mind of original wakefulness, and do not seek an enlightenment separate from that. End quote. Here's Victor C. He had a non-NDE experience. He says, this experience has shown me something that I would like to attempt to describe in words. What I believe is that while we are in this body, we are equipped with the consciousness that comes with it. The difference between how I view what this consciousness is in relation to my view of what awareness is two different things. Awareness, for me, is what is behind the consciousness that comes with the functioning of mind and body. The awareness behind it, however, is a much broader, infinite nature. The thoughts that we all have in our consciousness appear to be a constant stream that is continuous and linear in nature. However, upon intense concentration on what is an iota of time between our thoughts, I believe that what I have experienced was a gateway leading out of consciousness and into the hidden spectrum of pure awareness that lies beyond. While in this state, I have no memory of breathing or any other bodily functions that would be obvious in a normal state of consciousness. Goes on and says, the best way that I can describe it is that this state was beyond the need for thoughts or senses. Thoughts and senses are the things that, in my view, pertain to consciousness. Where I was, it was a state of pure awareness, beyond consciousness, and therefore the need of thoughts or senses. As stated earlier, what I experienced was the passing through of the space between my thoughts, which led me from the state of consciousness that comes with being in my body to the state of infinite awareness that lies behind consciousness, a state in which the body, consciousness, and all other attachments are surrendered and seemingly left behind. When you ask if there is life after this life, the answer is no, because there is no before or after, there is just now. Now either exists in awareness with consciousness covering it up, or awareness in its purest state beyond consciousness, end quote. So you could say thought involves the past and the present, which are both projections, but there is reflection upon what you are seeing, or memories serve no purpose. I think they are meaning the thought, like I need to pay this bill, or I got to go to the bathroom. It's the power of now. There's the triune brain theory of the evolution of the brain that shows that the inner portion of the human brain is composed of the reptilian complex and mammalian brain, whereas there is a human primate layer surrounding it, which results in the constant struggle with our lower animal nature. I probably should have put this up above with the other brain stuff, so I'm just going to skip on through it. There's a little bit about forms and how Plato was clearly a huge influence on the Gnostics. There was a section of Plato found in the Nag Hammadi, and Plato's Socrates held that the world of forms is transcendent to our own world, and is also the central basis of reality. Superordinate to matter, forms are the most pure of all things. Furthermore, he believed that true knowledge, intelligence, is the ability to grasp the world of form with one's mind. A form is a spatial, transcendent to space, and a temporal, transcendent to time. A temporal means that it does not exist within any time period. Rather, it provides the formal basis for time. Yeah, I'm going to skip on because I'm probably going to bore you with all this stuff. near-death experiencers and out-of-body experiencers back all this up by saying they go or travel wherever their consciousness focuses. Those who reach the higher gamma states of consciousness through meditation techniques combined with silence and compassion, such as the Tibetan Buddhist monks, talk of the luminous mind, and it's how to access the pure state of consciousness. We'll go on to this topic of shadow beings. There are thousands of people relating their experiences with shadow beings or shadow people, even shadow spiders. Some of the shadow beings wear different kinds of hats, like top hats. They're often seen leaning over a bed, whispering to a sleeping person. You have to remember sleep paralysis is only half of the sightings. There's just as many of people who are awake. So one person says, last night a dark figure lay next to me and whispered in my ear, my army as I lay, end quote. Another person said, and I'd see a tall dark figure by my bed and I'd hear many things, whispering things I couldn't understand in my ears, end quote. Another said, quote, I had my first experience with a shadow person on Halloween night of this year. I was walking home from work and it was around 12:30. I felt it many times I was being followed, then out of nowhere I heard whispering in my ears, even though I had earbuds in. Out of the corner of my eye, I seen the shadow of a person laying on the ground. I turned to get a better look, and it stayed there until I shined the flashlight on my phone towards it, but it disappeared right before the light got to it. I stood there for a minute to gather my thoughts and continued on home, but every once in a while, the whispering in my ears started up again. When I tried to focus on making out the whispers, it would fade out and the whispers would become stronger, more occurring if I tried to ignore them. Once I got home, it stopped. The one person I trusted made me think that I was crazy, saying that it was Halloween night and it was in my mind. I know what I heard and saw. It was not in my head, end quote. Another one said, I've had many shadow person and many out-of-body experiences. Over the last few years, the shadow person occurrences have escalated to more evil and dark experiences. This morning was the latest one I had. It felt like someone was holding my head down, trying to put its mouth on mine. I reach out to see who it is, and it whispers, it doesn't matter who I am. Oh, my God, sheer terror. I have heard the growls and felt the cold hands touch me. It is not fun, end quote. Another one, quote, the dark spirit whispered something in my ear as it held me up. It then let me down. I felt one last pull until my cat then walked on my chest and laid on me. I felt the weight of my cat was not letting myself get pulled, and I woke up. But it was like I was never asleep. I never saw the spirit, but I felt it there. This lasted for about 2 hours, end quote. It's another one. I had just begun to nod off when I was suddenly struck with sleep paralysis. I could feel and see a dark presence in the corner of my room watching me, which I could only describe as the devil, and a weight of some demonic force pressing down on my chest. As if I knew exactly what was happening, this demon was trying to enter my body, maybe to possess me through my chest. I tried to speak, but my lips were sealed shut. I began to panic, and I did the only thing I felt was instinctively right. I was able to force out 3 words from the corner of my mouth. Jesus, help me. And instantly, the pressure stopped. The force in the corner of my room disappeared, and a voice whispered in my right ear, we haven't much time, and everything was over. In a panic-stricken frenzy, I grabbed a notepad and wrote down my experience, end quote. Another one. Quote, as I was lying there trying to make myself go to sleep, I heard 2 cats fighting. I was feeling uneasy but thought nothing of it. Then out of nowhere, all sound stopped and the room got really cold. I found myself frozen and unable to move and heard someone whisper as clear as the water right in my left ear, come with me. All I could do was move closer to my sleeping husband until sleep finally took me. The next morning, I talked to him about it, thinking he might laugh at me, but instead he told me he heard someone whisper in his ear as well, but couldn't make out what they said. Later that day, we talked to my uncle about it, and he told us that they've had a few experiences themselves. He told us that sometimes doors slam shut when no windows or doors are open, and their kid had told them that he could see about 5 boys of different ages, and they keep molesting him. My grandmother had spent a few nights there, too, and told us that a woman was keeping her up because she wouldn't stop talking to her. She got so scared that she keeps rejecting the invitation to stay with them again. End quote. Another one. Me, watching scary movies all the time. I left the basement alone and took off back upstairs and shut my door. I turn down the music and call my mom. Straight to voicemail, so I sit down on my bed. I hear another crash. I wasn't going back downstairs for sure, I thought. I ignored the sound of something breaking and proceeded. The fear overwhelmed me. I know I wasn't exaggerating, but something felt like it touched me right there on the shoulder. The touch felt like it took over me, had great power. And something says to me, don't be afraid, Leia Poopoo, which was crazy because the only person who called me that was my late uncle. I was first feared of the whisper, but nowadays I look back and smile, end quote. Person says, the rest of my experiences felt very dark. I wouldn't see any figures, though. They would always come from behind. Here are some of them. One night I woke up and heard something speak in my ear behind me. I was lying on my right-hand side. It was clear and in a male voice. It was almost a whisper. I can't remember what it said, but it didn't say anything sick. It seemed to be linked to the thoughts I had in my head at the time. It was something like, but that never happened. I felt completely constrained as if I had been tied up and felt it shaking me side to side. And could hear a loud, high-pitched, creepy laugh. It would laugh and shake me for a few minutes and stop. As soon as I opened my eyes again and tried to move my leg, the laughing and shaking would start again. After that experience, I felt hopeless and gave up. I felt there was no point even trying to fight against it anymore because it didn't work. I would say in my head, please stop this. Why, God, is this happening to me? And I could feel my tear running down my cheek. Here is another night that really messed with my head. I was lying in bed on my right-hand side again, along the right edge of the bed. I felt like I was still awake with my eyes shut. Then I felt a bounce and heard squeaking noises coming from the bottom left corner of my bed as if someone was on it. The fear just hit me as I realized I was going to have yet another horrible night. I opened my eyes and slightly moved my foot to try and dash out, but then I heard a terrifying growl. Just a few more here. This one says, there was one that it looked like a shadow spider that crawled into my pillow and started whispering things I couldn't understand, but the voice sounded demonic. Every time I'm having this episode, my body feels a tingling sensation, and I used to compare it more as electricity running through my body, end quote. Next one, quote, I've not seen any shadow, dark person, etc., but experienced the paralysis, the tingling from head to toe as I descend into this night terror, thinking I've woken up to interact with all my surrounding, only to realize I'm still in bed. I feel a presence that puts a fear right through my soul. I've been restrained, pulled, and at one time felt a presence move up against me in a voice at its lowest whisper, I'll kill you if it's the last thing I do. Recently, I've come to wonder if I'm being haunted due to the worst imagined, this, whatever it is, end quote. The last one says, I was at the point of falling asleep when I heard the most evil voice whisper in my left ear, something in another language which I did not understand. I opened my eyes, and above me was this dark, shadow-looking figure. It was blacker than black, and once it saw me see it, it started to attack me. It came at me over and over. Each time it hit me, I would hear this loud, resounding clash sound like someone hitting cymbals together, end quote. So the great Swiss psychologist Carl Jung wrote a great deal about archetypes, of which he identified 12. And on the collective, I'm going to get to the shadow archetype. That's where I'm going with this. On the collective unconsciousness, he theorized that, quote, in addition to our immediate consciousness, which is of a thoroughly personal state in which we believe to be the only empirical psyche, there exists a second psychic system of a collective, universal, and impersonal nature, which is identical in all individuals. This collective unconscious does not develop individually, but is inherited. It consists of pre-existent forms, the archetypes, which can only become conscious secondarily, which give definite form to certain psychic contents, end quote. He talks about the trickster archetype. He says, the trickster is a primitive cosmic being of divine animal nature. On the one hand, superior to man because of his superhuman qualities, and on the other hand, inferior to him because of his unreason and unconsciousness, end quote. Another one, he says, quote, what actually happens is that the conscious mind is then able to free itself from the fascination of evil and is no longer obliged to live it compulsively. The darkness and the evil have not gone up in smoke. They have merely withdrawn into the unconscious owing to loss of energy, where they remain unconscious so long as all is well with the conscious. But if the conscious should find itself in a critical or doubtful situation, then it soon becomes apparent that the shadow is not dissolved into nothing, but is only waiting for a favorable opportunity to reappear as a projection upon one's neighbor. If this trick is successful, there is immediately created between them that world of primordial darkness where everything that is characteristic of the trickster can happen, even on the highest plane of civilization, end quote. Some other quotes, he says, the creator of the world did not fashion these things directly from himself, but copied them from archetypes outside himself. In the Corpus Hermeticum, God is called archetypal light. end quote. He says, quote, with her cunning play of illusions, the soul lures into life the inertness of matter that does not want to live. She makes us believe incredible things, that life may be lived. She is full of snares and traps in order that man should fall, should reach the earth, entangle himself there, and stay caught so that life should be lived, end quote. Quote, but to have soul is the whole venture of life, for soul is a life-giving demon who plays his elfin game above and below human existence, for which reason, in the realm of dogma, he is threatened and propitiated with superhuman punishments and blessings that go far beyond the possible deserts of human beings, end quote. Next one says, quote, modern man, in experiencing this archetype, comes to know that most ancient form of thinking as an autonomous activity whose object he is. Hermes Trismegistus, or the Thoth of Hermetic literature, Orpheus, the Palmandrus, Shepherd of Men, and his near relation to the poem of Hermes are other formulations of the same experience. If the name Lucifer were not prejudicial, it would be a very suitable one for this archetype. But I have been content to call it the archetype of the wise old man, or of meaning. Like all archetypes, it has a positive and a negative aspect, end quote. So Wikipedia said shadow. In Jungian psychology, shadow or a shadow aspect may refer to an unconscious aspect of the personality which the conscious ego does not identify in itself. Everyone carries a shadow, Jung wrote, and the less it is embodied in the individual's conscious life, the blacker and denser it is. It may be one's linked to more primitive animal instincts which are superseded during early childhood by the conscious mind, end quote. According to Wikipedia, quote, Carl Jung stated the shadow to be the unknown dark side of the personality. According to Jung, the shadow, in being instinctive and irrational, is prone to psychological projection, in which a perceived personal inferiority is recognized as a perceived moral deficiency in someone else. Jung writes that if these projections remain hidden, quote, the projection-making factor, the shadow archetype, then has a free hand and can realize its object if it has one, or bring about some other situation characteristic of its power. These projections insulate and harm individuals by acting as a constantly thickening veil of illusion between the ego and the real world, end quote. Jung described this deeper layer as a psychic activity which goes on independently of the conscious mind and is not dependent even on the upper layers of the unconscious, untouched and perhaps untouchable by personal experience, end quote. This bottom layer of the shadow is also what Jung referred to as the collective unconscious. Jung wrote, quote, it must be Jekyll, the conscious personality, who integrates the shadow and not vice versa. Otherwise, the conscious becomes the slave of the autonomous shadow, end quote. Shadow is different than shadow people, but they are related, because if the shadow is your dark side, that could include fear, doubt, hate, anger, envy, greed, etc., which is part of what the shadow beings feed off of. Here's another quote. He says, we begin to travel up through the healing spiral, straight up. Here is a struggle to retain awareness of the shadow, but not identification with it. Non-identification demands considerable moral effort, prevents a descent into that darkness. But though the conscious mind is liable to be submerged at any moment in the unconscious, understanding acts like a lifesaver. It integrates the unconscious, reincorporates the shadow into the personality, producing a stronger, wider consciousness than before. Assimilation of the shadow gives a man body, so to speak, provides thereby a launching pad for further individuation. The integration of the shadow, or the realization of the personal unconscious, marks the first stage of the analytic process. Without it, a recognition of anima and animus is impossible. Conversely, to the degree to which the shadow is recognized and integrated, the problem of the anima, that is, of relationship, is constellated and becomes the center of the individuation quest. End quote. Jung wrote, quote, one does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. He also concluded, if at the end of the trickster myth the savior is hinted at, this comforting premonition or hope means that some calamity or other has happened and has been consciously understood. Only out of disaster can the longing for the savior arise. In other words, the recognition and unavoidable integration of the shadow creates such a harrowing situation that nobody but a savior can undo the tangled web of fate. In the case of the individual, the problem constellated by the shadow is answered on the plane of the anima, that is, through relatedness. In the history of the collective, as in the history of the individual, everything depends on the development of consciousness. This gradually brings liberation from imprisonment and unconsciousness, and is therefore a bringer of light as well as of healing. As in its collective mythological form, so also the individual shadow contains within it the seed of conversion into its opposite. End quote. Sometimes our greatest points of realization are at the points of our greatest struggles. And it's as if this energy is oscillating back and forth, maybe, with higher peaks and lower valleys, and one can tune into the low troughs, which is what most choose to do, or one can arise above that lower primitive urge and draw intuition from the peaks. Here's another thing Jung said: there is no birth of consciousness without pain. He said, quote, these mythological features extend even to the highest region of man's spiritual development. If we consider, for example, the demonic features exhibited by Yahweh in the Old Testament, we shall find them not a few reminders of the unpredictable behavior of the trickster, of his senseless orgies of destruction and his self-imposed sufferings, together with the same gradual development into a savior and his simultaneous humanization. Quote. He also said, quote, a curious combination of typical trickster motifs can be found in the alchemical figure of Mercurius. For instance, his fondness for sly jokes and malicious pranks, his powers as a shapeshifter, his dual nature, half animal, half divine, his exposure to all kinds of tortures, and last but not least, his approximation to the figure of a savior. These qualities make Mercurius seem like a demonic being resurrected from primitive times, older even than the Greek Hermes, end quote. So you could say the Sophia mythos is pretty similar also. She went through suffering until she realized her wrongs and repented. I do think we need to acknowledge the shadow beings and accept they are part of reality. We should also take ownership that we, as a collective Sophia, contributed to their reality. I don't think we necessarily need to integrate, assimilate the shadow, but rather to be able to understand it and forgive it. It seems that as you become aware of your own impulses and signals, you put intent on them, observing them, which figuratively is shining light on what was dark, assimilating the shadow. Assimilating your shadow is supposed to be a metaphor for enlightening your consciousness, ridding it of shadow, which is different than shadow people. I think transmuting the shadow into light, as the Emerald Tablets say, is a better way of putting it, and I'm going to talk about the Emerald Tablets in a little bit. Assimilating would mean making the shadow part of you, or you part of it. Speaking of archetypes, a couple other archetypes I've noticed are the vampire archetype and the zombie archetype. And psychic vampires are very real. They are attention seekers in a lot of cases, and I think social media is pushing this behavior. There could be bodies that drain energy and then entities that cause it. I've used the analogy of vampires who drink blood, which sustains our life force, before, but it bears repeating because the interest in vampire shows has resurged lately. Just look at the success of the Twilight series, and it's exactly what the astral parasites do. They suck or drain our energy from us. I also think the resurgence of zombies is another example. All the talk of the zombie apocalypse, etc. Zombies are known to eat brains, which is also what they attack, our consciousness and thoughts. Being the undead, they are also technically not alive, but can be animated or brought to life by consuming our brains. There is even a parallel in that most of the sheep are brain dead themselves and walk around asleep or dead. This next topic is pre-birth memories and reincarnation. It's like another phenomenon altogether. It's along the same lines as near-death experiences, but these are pre-birth. And most of these were taken from prebirthmemories.com. Some really interesting stuff. First person said, at the end of all this, I begged the powers to let me stay in the heavenly land. I told them I had been well behaved all these years and hadn't done anything wrong. They acknowledged this, but stated that the people who stayed there permanently had had exemplary lives for their previous life, but that I hadn't really. I knew then that they wanted me to have another life on earth. At this point, I remembered that I had had many previous lives and felt dismayed I would have to have another one and be separated from my heavenly friends. Again, I begged them, and the voice asked whether or not I wanted to have an exemplary last life. At this point, I replied that I didn't particularly. There was a moment of silence where I reflected a little and saw that another life was the most noble choice, and that really wasn't much of a choice anyway, end quote. Next pre-birth memory says, my next realization, however, was that I would lose my memory. I clearly remember saying out loud, "You're going to swipe my memory, aren't you?" At this point, there was a moment of silence, which I took as a yes, before I remember my memory slipping away as a dream memory does upon waking. I resisted as fiercely as I could, however, with all my power feeling a bit of a rebel. The next thing I knew was that I was in my mother's womb and was really happy, as I still had some fairly good recollection of the spirit world and the judgment, and that I hadn't lost all my memory against the odds. I remember thinking that the womb state was in between, in comfort between heavenly land and earth. I was extremely cozy and remember sleeping most of the time. I remember the colors, dark to orange, and feeling warm, cozy, relaxed, and in fetal position, end quote. Oopfer said, quote, "The place is really white on the floor and ceiling, and it's about the size of a large living room. The whiteness on the floor and ceiling fades into pitch darkness. There are things that look like machines there, and I remember one you lay in. I can remember thinking about the fact that I am afraid of what's in the darkness, but it's only because I have part of my personality for the next life already. I remember thinking that otherwise I wouldn't be afraid and I would understand what's in the darkness. The man that's with me is helping me and guiding me to get ready for the next life," end quote. Bruce M. says, quote, "My own pre-birth memory is this. I was gently awoken in a place with no time, no light, no darkness. I just suddenly was. I remember not really wanting to awaken, very similar to the feeling of waking in a warm bed and contemplating stepping onto a cold floor. I was somehow aware that I had been resting, and in fact, I had needed this period of recuperation. At the time of awaking, I was presented with some sort of choice. I've always taken this question to be something like, is time that you lived again, do you want to do this? When I say choice, it sounds as though I could have declined, when in fact it was more of a case of being gently nudged towards something that was predetermined. It seemed that I immediately started the process of preparing to be alive. It seemed to require that I willingly enter into a state which would necessarily diminish my state of knowing. I was guided through what I would now call an orientation process that prepared me for my coming experience of life. During this process, I was provided an overview of the age of man that I was entering into. I was told many subtle things. One idea which has always seemed to stand out is the fact that I would be meeting with old friends. I was here to do some things, but also to witness something. I'm not wishing to sound dramatic, but it seemed to be that I was to witness the end of a period of man. That is not to say that mankind would end, but there is an ending to something. I was also given previews of various upcoming times and various patterns that would occur in my life. I was shown the part of the world where I would be. At some point, it all started to move faster and become involuntary, like being swept into a current and chaotic. I was born in an intense explosion of senses. Slowly the chaos subsided, and I recall many periods, episodes, and waves adjoining the world. For instance, I remember the process of learning to operate my body and understand language." End quote. Amy said, "I am fortunate enough to have strong memories of my time before birth. I used to think everyone had such memories, but most do not. I was standing before the council. It was a long table and a council of about 10 higher spirits seated on one side in purple robes. The council is a group of very high spirits who help you plan your life's challenges before you are incarnated. They are responsible to approve or deny what you think you want to accomplish in your next incarnation. I wanted to take a giant step to get to the next level spiritually, so I asked to take on a lot of tough missions. They cautioned me strongly that I was taking on too much and almost did not approve what I had set out to do, but I insisted, and they ultimately approved of my missions," end quote. In both near-death experiences and ketamine experiences, there may be a marked reluctance to return. In his book Addict, Stephen Smith describes being forced to return as being double-crossed by God. In Christian cultures, the person may be told that it's not yet their time to go, while in India, they may be told that there was a clerical error. There's another pre-birth experience. "Before I was born, I remember having a panoramic view in which I was shown my life. Almost immediately after being shown, what was a very vivid experience began to fade, with the actual events purposefully clouded. I was left with the general gist of what my life mission would be. I was shown the sad times and remembered some of the more depressing moments. I was asked if I was sure I wanted to go through with it. I remember thinking hard about it. I said yes. I was then asked again if I was sure. I again said yes, I was sure. I think I saw everything as it was to happen before it clouded. Some of the situations seemed to have branches or forks, though, like as though if I were to pick a certain route, my life would be different, with convergent places along the way in which there were no deviations possible," end quote. Another one says, quote, "So now I am waiting. It seems like the stars or constellations must line up in a configuration that is the map or book of my journey. It's not that it causes it, but rather outpictures it. At last, everything clicks into place, and I am ready. I am sinking, floating down. I may be slowly rotating on my back, face up, arms spread. It is like lazily falling through clouds. This is the process where the forgetting takes place. It feels similar to what happens under anesthesia, when you want to test or resist, but your mind keeps drifting, and then you are asleep. I have scattered memories being in or out of the fetus. It felt confined and actually boring. When birth came, I had been impatiently ready for hours or more, subjectively speaking. Finally, the process began, only to be halted in the canal. There may have been some entanglement with the umbilical cord, which may explain why I became become terrified and suffocated trying to put on a tie. Eventually, the doctor used forceps. However, so clumsily, it left rash scratch marks on my face, a fact my mother later confirmed 35 years later. It also twisted my neck, which bothers me to this day. As I came out, I was blinded by the bright light and annoyed by a loud booming sound, which I know was someone saying it's a boy." End quote. Another one. Arjan recalls there is a script for our earthly lives, which leaves a lot of room for individual freedom, but fixes certain events that simply need to happen. He remembers that a spiritual being wrote specific things down for him. End quote. A man named Michael McGuire told Hallett his experience can be compared to waking from anesthesia. He says, "I can clearly remember being in the spiritual and then suddenly finding myself on earth, trapped in the baby's body. It's a bit like having an operation. One moment you're in an operating theater counting back from 10, the next you find yourself in the recovery room. The major difference is that when you have an operation, you're drowsy before and after the operation. With my experience, I was fully mentally alert before and after the transition to earth." End quote. Next one says, "Not before long, I was back in my spot far above. I felt a sudden jolt. An overwhelming sense of panic took over as I realized I was falling hard. I screamed, not in words or sound, but with something else that sounded like the word, no. It was like going down a funnel, the closest feeling you can get to being flushed down the toilet. The walls were suffocating and dark and got smaller the further down it went. Somewhere and at some point in this free fall, I realized it was doing something else. I was forgetting things. With every ounce of my being, I remember fighting that urge, but eventually it overcame. And next thing I remember, I was on my father's back in the mountains, gazing at the snow." End quote. Next one. "To give this temporal experience real meaning that reached beyond to a true reality and goes on forever, I've been told that this is the awaken. An awakening from a sleep that hides us from a pre-existence and would seek to entrap us in a world originally intended to be temporary." End quote. Next one. "My state at this time I remember as being new, different, and wanting to experience the physical. I remember the source communicating with me, but I do not remember what was said. The only thing I seem to remember of this is a sense of warning and instruction. I think the instruction was for observation and report. Maybe that is why I study science. No, I love the earth. That is why I study science. Whether this is a common experience and all others go through this, but do not remember it, I am not sure." End quote. Here's a really good one. Michael put his hand up and said that he remembers watching everyone from up in the sky and being in his mother's belly before he was born. He said that when he was waiting to be born, he was invisible, and he was in my gray car with me on the way to the hospital while I listened to the song Winter, Spring, Summer, or Fall. This is what he called the song. He likely doesn't know the real name, and he probably hasn't heard it since, but it was You've Got a Friend by James Taylor. I used to have the cassette tape in that car. This is bizarre because I did drive a gray car at the time, and I haven't had one for the past 7 years, 2 years after he was born. I can't imagine he even knows that song from today's radio music. My heart started to beat like crazy. How the heck would he know that? Even his grandparents wouldn't know that, and his mom wouldn't have known that before she died. Even if somehow she did, he was only 3 months old when she passed. How would she tell him? I certainly never told her what song was on in the car on the way to the hospital, so I can't explain this. Michael said that he remembers me stopping for gas and asking the attendant for directions to the hospital. True. He said that he wanted me for his mommy because he liked my voice when I was speaking to the attendant. I did stop for gas, and I was kind of lost going to a rural hospital, so I asked for directions. Sorry, I lost place. Tried to do a page up. Darn it. All right, maybe I can edit this out. Okay, then he said he remembers that the parking lot was partially closed for construction, so I had to park on a corner and run to the hospital. By this point, my jaw was almost on the floor, and the whole class was staring at me. I never even told the class or Michael that I was at his birth. The class must have thought this was one crazy story. Then Michael said the most incredible thing. He said that while his real mom was in labor, he asked God if I could be his mom because he knew that his real mom wouldn't survive very long. He was afraid of being alone on earth. Apparently, he was told that he couldn't have me for his real mom, but that everything would be okay, and he would still get to be around me during his life. Michael said that he kept begging for me to be his mother. He watched me go down the hallway from the birthing suite to the waiting lounge to make a phone call from a payphone. True, there was no cell signal in the hospital, and that while I was there, I was very cold, so I put on a sweater that someone else left on the waiting room chairs. By this point, the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up. I hate to admit this, but I did find a nice warm cardigan in that waiting room, and I put it on because I was so cold. I've never done anything like that before, but it was a small hospital, and there were literally no other people in the labor ward. And I waited to see if anyone would come to clean the sweater, and no one did. I was so cold. I put it on and ended up wearing it home. Shame on me, I know. I still feel guilty about that. I felt so guilty that I never wore it again, especially because it reminds me of my friend who ended up passing away. Regardless, I have to mention it because I've never told anyone about taking someone else's sweater, and it's a huge part of the story. Michael concluded by saying that he watched me make the phone call and put on the other person's sweater, and that's the last thing he remembers. He was born about 30 minutes after I went to the lounge and made that phone call, end quote. Wow. So next one says, quote, the gatekeeper said, there is a life available that you would be acceptable or suited for. It will be very difficult and there will be much hardship. You do not have to accept it. It sounded to me like I was being offered a part in a play. Overjoyed and enthusiastic beyond words, I snapped at it. Yes, I'll take it. I'll go. You do not understand, the gatekeeper said. This life will be so difficult that if you take it, you may not be able to return here. At this point, I told him I still wanted to accept the life he had described, end quote. The next one says, quote, despite my begrudging sense of duty and my knowledge that my time of rest was up, I defied these two beings and told them to stuff it and that I was going back to sleep. They became slightly agitated and told me that they knew. I knew that I had to comply. However, I still was hesitant, remembering past lives spent on Earth, anguishing, painful lives that I was still recovering from. They mentioned some kind of promise that I had made and that it was no use trying to back out now. I was still not convinced that I was needed as badly as they said I was, and I began drifting back to sleep, half hoping that these beings would leave me alone, or leave me be. What happened instead was the cosmic equivalent of a scuffle as I felt my essence seized by these beings and heaved into a gently rotating blue portal that had opened up near us. I'd never been as offended as I was when this happened. I sensed that the two blue beings were my old friends and that we had shared many adventures, but this awakening of my spirit felt like betrayal, like I had finally gotten out of the cage only to be forced back in. The vision continued, and I was seemingly back in the dark, warm place of comfort I just left. I remember thinking that coming back to Earth was just a bad dream, and I was still safely snuggled up in the womb of God, for lack of better terminology. My relief was short-lived, however, because actually I was dozing inside of my physical mother's womb, which is almost a replica experience of the darkness. And soon, the sounds from outside and the atmosphere of excitement confirmed my worst fears, that the dream of me being forced to come back to Earth in this time of great strife was real, and that I already had a body and would have to live through another physical life. Another wave of resentment came over me as a blast of unimaginable, cold and harsh artificial light hit my face. At this point, the shock basically cut all thought, and I became, for all intents and purposes, a human baby complete with memory wipe and material needs, end quote. This one is from Patrick, a listener who emailed me, and he said, quote, I have just begun writing publicly about them. They started messing with me as a child because of what I came to accomplish. I've been out of the body a few times consciously, though uncontrolled looking back on it. I didn't do it with a proper purpose, so the results were as aimless as the intent. Now I truly need to check some data points to complete the larger mission, so I'm looking forward to some better attempts and results. I've been the proverbial old soul my whole life. I actually exited this whole thing one night and found myself in a flat room with the whole universe contained within a white orbish thing sitting on a pedestal in a window that reached out into hyperspace. Regarding the exit, I was doing some meditations and realized the chakra system that the New Age tells us to tune into is used by the higher self, which is, in fact, the Archon Demiurge to feed off of us, the personal anchoring system to be here and come back. I started to pulse the energy outwards one by one, and then when all seven of them were pulsing out, it spontaneously happened. Part of the challenge here is to go into the Demiurge, higher self, personal rep, and merge with it. Love it and go through out of it and enclose it in within your being. I accomplished this that night and popped out in that room. I busted out a giant Buddha laugh. I came to see that the ultimate graduation test is growing more powerful than that aspect of ourselves, which is unconscious and out of touch with the whole. Most who have gotten here use the Gnostic term. I've also been inside the control room, if you will, of the higher self-archon control system. It's like the architect scene with Neo in the Matrix with all the incarnations on the screens. I traveled through the silver cord to get there. From there is how I popped out into that room I mentioned earlier. It ties into the end of the 2001 Space Odyssey scene in the white room. It was, quote, unique, quite unique, though, because the room was two-dimensional, but it was expressed hyperdimensionally is the best way to explain it. I'm working on some artistic skills to begin and express it in images. I started out a love and lighter when I got into the channel material, then realized they're actually the dark dudes masquerading, and found out there really isn't a love-light option because love-light are the two sides of the same problem, namely external authority, identifying with anything outside of oneself, end quote. I also got some more messages from the guy who dreams of the Demiurge, for instance. He was a little child, and he talked about a control room, too, and some gyms and stuff, and I've got I didn't put the pictures up. He asked me not to, but I do have some of the captions up on my website, and I probably should have included this talk, but I forgot. So anyway, it seems we have a slight amount of free will, but certain things happen. That is destiny. The amnesia begins not in the womb, but at the point at descending down in frequency. There are millions upon millions of souls who will never break from this reality as they were made for this reality. They are content here with all the drama and entertainment. They're not seeking out the meaning of life or for the truth. So when they see their God, who is a ruler, it is their God, if that makes sense. If you're one of the few reading this paper or listening to the podcast, it's most likely you are from the eternal light realms. This next section is about the receivers of the light. In chapter 25 of the first book, Epistis Sophia, a Gnostic book, it talks about the receivers of the light. It says, quote, "And when the time of the number of Melchizedek, the great receiver of light, the coming of Melchizedek came, he was wont to come into the midst of the ions and all the rulers who are bound in the sphere and in the fate. And he carried away the purification of the light from all the rulers of the eons and from all the rulers of the fate and from those of the sphere. For he carried away then that which brings them into agitation. And he set in motion the hastener who was over them and made them turn their circles swiftly. And he, the hastener, carried away their power which was in them, and the breath of their mouth, and the tears of their eyes, and the sweat of their bodies. And Melchizedek, the receiver of the light, purifieth those powers, and carrieth their light into the treasury of the light, while the servitors of all the rulers gather together all matter from them, and the servitors of all the rulers of the fate, and the servitors of the sphere, which is below the eons, take it and fashion it into the souls of men and cattle and reptiles and wild beasts and birds and send them down into the world of mankind. And further, the receivers of the sun and the receivers of the moon, if they look above and see the configurations of the paths of the eons and the configuration of the fate and those of the sphere, then they take from them the light power. And the receivers of the sun get it ready and deposit it until they hand it over to the receivers of Melchizedek, the light purifier, and their material refuse they bring to the sphere which is below the eons, and fashion it into the souls of men, and fashion it into the souls of reptiles and cattle and wild beasts and of birds, according to the circle of the rulers of that sphere, and according to all the configurations of its revolution, and they cast them into this world of mankind, and they become souls in this region." End quote. And in chapter 131, it refers to the making of a new soul. It says, quote, if on the other hand it is a new soul which they have taken out of the sweat of the rulers and out of the tears of their eyes, or far rather out of the breath of their mouths, in a word, if is one of the new souls or one of such souls, if it is one out of the sweat, then the five great rulers of the great fate take up the sweat of all the rulers and of their eons, knead it together withal, portion it, and make it into a soul. Or far rather, if it is refuse of the purification of light, then Melchizedek take it up from the rulers. The five great rulers of the great fate knead the refuse together, portion it, and make it into different souls, so that every one of the rulers of the eons, every one of them, putteth his portion into the soul. For this cause they knead it jointly, so that all may partake of the soul. And the five great rulers, if they portion it and make it into souls, bring it out of the sweat of the rulers. But if it is one out of the refuse of the purification of the light, then Melchizedek, the great receiver of light, take it up from the rulers, or a word out of such souls, when the five rulers portion it, make it into different souls. They talk about mixing a cup of forgetfulness, which the soul takes and drinks and causes the memory wipe. It says, and the five great rulers of the great fate of the eons, and the ruler of the disk of the sun, and the ruler of the disk of the moon, and breathe within to that soul, and therefore come out of them a portion of my power, which the last helper cast into the mixture, end quote. According to the Gnostic texts, there are different types of souls, and they have no jurisdiction over the souls which come from the eternal light realms. This is, quote, and the Savior answered and said unto Mary, finally hast thou spoken. The servitors indeed are they who bear witness to all sins, but they abide in the judgments, seizing the souls and convicting all the souls of sinners who have received no mysteries, and they keep them fast in the chaos, chastising them. And those retributive receivers cannot overstep the chaos to reach to the orders which are above the chaos and convict the souls which come forth out of those regions. Now then, it is not lawful to use force on the souls which receive mysteries and lead them into the chaos, so that the retributive servitors may convict them. But the retributive servitors convict the souls of the sinners, and they keep fast those who have received no mysteries, which may lead them out of the chaos. The souls, on the other hand, which receive mysteries, they have no power of convicting them, because they do not come forth out of their regions. And also, if they come forth into their regions, they are not able to obstruct them. Nay, they cannot lead them into that chaos, end quote. Quote, the retributive servers follow the soul, being witnesses to it for all the sins which it commits, and they may convict it in the judgments, end quote. Another quote, when the time is completed through the sphere, the receivers of the Yaldabaoth, that's the demiurge, come after their soul. And the retributive receivers assign the servitors to follow them and be the witness of all the sins they commit, with a view to the manner and method how they will chastise them in the judgments, end quote. Another one says, in a word, it driveth into all things which the rulers have commanded for it, and it is hostile to the soul, making it do what pleaseth it not. Now therefore, Mary, this is in fact the foe of the soul, and this compelleth it to do all sins, the state of the sinful soul after death. Now therefore, the time of that man is completed. First cometh forth the destiny, and leadeth the man unto death, through the rulers and their bonds with which they are bound through the fate. And thereafter the retributive receivers come and lead that soul out of the body, and thereafter the retributive receivers spend 3 days circling round with that soul in all the regions, dispatch it to all the eons of the world, and the counterfeiting spirit and the destiny follow that soul, and the power returneth to the Virgin of Light, end quote. When I was with my grandma in her final days, she was talking to somebody that was not there, and they were asking her evidently what her name was. She was telling them her name and her birth date. I mean, it certainly sounds to me like the retributive servitors that are, you know, and then it was also, they were talking about the angel of death or the grim reaper, you know, the destiny, fate. Another quote, when therefore the time of the chastisements of that soul and the judgments of the rulers of the midst shall be completed, the counterfeiting spirit leadeth the soul up out of the regions of the rulers of the midst, and bringeth it before the light of the sun, according to the commandment of the first man, you, and bring it before the judge, the Virgin of Light. And she proveth that soul, and findeth that it is a sinning soul, and seeth her light power into it for its standing upright, and because of the body and the community of sense, the type of which I will tell you at the expansion of the universe. And the Virgin of Light seals that soul and hands it to one of her receivers, and will have it cast into a body which is suitable to the sins which it has committed. And amen, I say unto you, they will not discharge that soul from the changes of the body until it has yielded its last circuit according to its merit. So these circles and circuits they're talking about, that is their reincarnational lives, you know. Last quote. Hearken therefore that I may discourse with you concerning the soul according as I said. The five great rulers of the great fate of the eons and the rulers of the disk of the sun and the rulers of the disk of the moon breathe into that soul. And there comes out of them a portion of my power. And as I just said, and the portion of that power remains within the soul so that the soul can stand. And they put the counterfeiting spirit outside the soul, watching it and assigned to it. And the rulers bind it to the soul with their seals and with their bonds and seal it to it, that it may compel it always, so that it continually does mischief in its iniquities, in order that it may be their slave always and remain under their sway always in the changes of the body. They seal it to that which may be in all the sin and all the desires of the world, the parents we are to abandon. For this cause, therefore, have I said in this manner, brought the mysteries into this world, which undo all the bonds of the counterfeiting spirit and all the seals which are bound to the soul, for those which make the soul free and free it from its parents, the rulers, and make it into refined light and lead it up into the kingdom of its Father, the first issue, the first mystery forever. So now I'm going to talk about the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. The original source of the Emerald Tablet is unknown, and it's going to say a lot of the same things I just read, I mean, but in different terminology. Although Hermes Trismegistus is the first author in the text, its known appearance is in a book written in Arabic between the 6th and 8th centuries. The text was first translated into Latin in the 12th century. Numerous translations, interpretations, and commentaries followed. For what it's worth, this is translated by Doriao. This quote, chosen was I from the sons of men. And this is Thoth the, they call him Thoth the Atlantean talking. He says, chosen was I from the sons of men, taught by the dwellers so that his purposes might be fulfilled. Purposes yet unborn into the womb of time. Long ages I dwelt in the temple, learning ever and yet more, ever more wisdom, until I too approached the light emitted from the great fire. Taught me he the path to Amenti, the underworld where the great king sits upon his throne of might. I'm just going to read different quotes. He says, here they come to earth and want to free man from their bondage. Far in a past time, lost in the space-time, the children of light look down upon the world. Seeing the children of men in their bondage, bound by the force that came from the beyond, knew they that only by freedom from bondage could man ever arise from the earth to the sun. Down they descended and created bodies, taking all the semblance of men as their own. The masters of everything said after their forming, we are they who were formed from the space dust, partaking of life from the infinite all, living in the world as children of men, like and yet unlike the children of men. This quote here sounds almost like the VR game of Avatars incarnating from Pod. This is, quote, there in the circle from eon to eon sit the great masters, living a life not known among men. There in the halls of life they lie sleeping. Free flows their soul through the bodies of men. Time after time, while their bodies lie sleeping, incarnate they in the bodies of men, teaching and guiding onward and upward, out of the darkness into the light. End quote. It seems you too may become as one with the seven masters or time lords, as it says, quote, he who by progress has grown from the darkness, lifted himself from the night into the light, free is made he of the halls of Amenti, free of the flower of light and of life. Guided he then by wisdom and knowledge, passes from men to the master of life. There he may dwell as one with the masters, free from the bonds of the darkness of night. Seated within the flower of radiance, sit seven lords from the space times above us, helping and guiding through infinite wisdom the pathway through time of the children of men. I think most of this text is mainly propaganda, but it's pretty much laying out the reincarnational system that you hear about in the near-death experiences and the pre-birth experiences, but in this text it does talk about the light within and the fire within man, so I think there may be some good clues in here. The nine and the lords of the Karmas is custodians and watchers of the force of man's bondage, ready to loose when the light has been reached. First and most mighty sits the veiled presence, Lord of Lords, the infinite nine, over the other from each of the lords of the cycles. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, each with his mission, each with his powers, guiding, directing the destiny of man. There sit they, mighty and potent, free of all time and space, not of this world they, yet akin to it, Elder Brothers Day of the Children of Men, Judging and Weighing Day with their wisdom, watching the progress of light among men. This almost sounds like the carousel ritual in the movie Logan's Run. It says, quote, "Then grew in the great space before me, flame after flame from the veil of the night. Uncounted millions leaped they before me, some flaming forth as flowers of fire," end quote. This part sounds like how the gods rewarded good men with not sending them to hell. It said, quote, "Thou hast been made free of the halls of many. Choose thou thy work among the children of men. Then spoke I, O great master, let me be a teacher of men, leading them onward and upward until they too are lights among men, freed from the veil of the night that surrounds them, flaming with light that shall shine among men," inquire, end quote. The next quote talks about the fire within. It says, quote, "He who knows the fire that is within himself shall ascend unto the eternal fire and dwell in it eternally. Fire, the inner fire, is the most potent of all force, for it overcometh all things and penetrates to all things of the earth. Oft have I journeyed the deep hidden passage, looked on the light that is life among men. There is neath the flowers of life ever living. Searched I the hearts and secrets of men. I found that man is but living in darkness. Light of the great fire is hidden within." Let me ask you, like, within the demiurge system, are these things not possibly true? I mean, it's definitely laying out the system of the demiurge, the lords of karma, judgment, reincarnation, growing towards the light. Pistis Sophia speaks of breaking the bonds and no longer having to complete the circuits. So this is the goal, ultimately, in the system of the demiurge, although I doubt they really gift it to very many. They rule the afterlife, and during the afterlife, those who do not have enough knowledge, they become the stumbling block. This talks about the form and the formless. This says, quote, "Forth from them come forth the logos, instruments they of the power over all. Vast is their countenance, yet hidden smallness, formed by a forming known yet unknown," end quote. Another one says, quote, "Nine is the Father, vast he of countenance, forming and changing from out of the formless. Meditate on the symbols I give thee. Keys are they, though hidden from men," end quote. Another one. "Each and all of them struggling upward, gaining the heights and plumbing the depths, moving at times in realms of brightness, living through darkness, gaining the light. Know, O man, that light is thine heritage. Know that darkness is only a veil. Sealed in thy is brightness eternal, waiting the moment of freedom to conquer, waiting to rend the veil of the night," end quote. Another one. "When ye have gained the light of all wisdom, free shall ye be to shine in the ether, one of the suns that light outer darkness, one of the space-born grown into light," end quote. The veil is the body. It's what our consciousness sees as the darkness of our own prison. Quote, "Form forth ye from the primal ether, filled with the brilliance that flows from the source, bound by the ether coalesced around, yet ever it flames until at last it is free. Lift up your flame from out of the darkness, fly from the night, and ye shall be free," end quote. Talking about being bound by the matter that imprisons us. Next one, quote, "List ye again, O man, to my wisdom, that hearing ye too shall might live and be free. Not of the earth are ye, earthly, but child of the infinite cosmic light. Know ye not, O man, of your heritage? Know ye not, or truly of the light? Son of the great sun, when ye shall gain wisdom, truly aware of your kinship with light, now to ye I give knowledge, freedom to walk in the path I have trod, showing ye truly how by my striving I trod the path that led to the stars. Hark ye, O man, and know thy bondage, know how to free thyself from the toils. Out of the darkness shall ye rise upward, one with the light and one with the stars. Follow ye ever the path of wisdom," end quote. Next one says, quote, "Deepen the silence. First ye must linger until at last ye are free from desire, free from the longing to speak in the silence. Conquer by silence the bondage of words, abstaining from eating until we have conquered desire for food. That is bondage of the soul. Then lie ye down in the darkness. Close ye your eyes from the rays of the light. Center thy soul force in the place of thine consciousness, shaking it free from the bonds of the night. Place in thy mind place the image thou desireth. Picture the place thou desireth to see. Vibrate back and forth with thy power. Loosen the soul from out of its night. Fiercely must thou shake with all thy power until the last thy soul shall be free," end quote. I think it does lay out a lot of the system, including how to be free. At night, our consciousness falls into a dream state from which we wake in the morning. Some are able to become aware they are dreaming and control the dream. We call this lucid dreaming. It could be that what we call this everyday normal waking state is just another dream, albeit at a slightly higher level, and when we sleep at night, it's a dream within a dream. If so, it could be that we need to wake up from this lower state of consciousness and become aware of the true reality. Perhaps that is what the previous passage from the Emerald Tablets was alluding to. It says, quote, formed forth ye from the primal ether, filled with the brilliance that flows from the source, bound by the ether coalesced around, yet ever it flames until last it is free. Lift up your flame from out of the darkness, fly from the night, and ye shall be free. Next quote. When ye have gained the light of all wisdom, free shall be to shine in the ether, one of the suns, one of the spaceborn grown into light. Next one says, hark ye, O man, and listen to this wisdom, where do name and form cease? Only in consciousness, invisible, an infinite force of radiance, bright. The forms that ye create by brightening a vision are true effects that shall follow thy cause. Man is a star bound to a body until in the end he is freed through a strife. Only by struggle and toiling thy utmost shall the star within thee bloom out in new life. He who knows the commencement of all things, free his star from the realm of night. End quote. Next one says, when unto thee comes a feeling, drawing thee nearer to the darker gate, examine thine and find if the freeing thou hast come from within. If thou shalt find the darkness thine own thoughts, banish them forth from the place in thy mind. Send through the body away vibration, your regular first and regular second, repeating time after time until free. Start the wave force in thy brain center, directed in waves from thine head to thy foot. But if thou findest thine is not darkened, be sure that a force is directed to thee. Only by knowing can thou overcome it. Only by wisdom can thou hope to be free. Knowledge brings wisdom, and wisdom is power. Attain, and ye shall have power over all. End quote. Next quote says, long ago, the sons of the morning descending found the world filled with night. There in that past began the struggle, the age-old battle, darkness and light. End quote. A few more here. Look to the light, O my brother. Open, and ye shall receive. Press on through the valley of darkness. Overcome the dweller of night. Keep ever thine eyes on the light plane, and thou shalt be one with the light. Man is in process of changing to forms that are not of this world. Grows he in time to the formless, a plane on the cycle above. Know ye must become formless before ye are with the light. The question is, what light is he, end quote. The question is, what light is he referring to, the astral light of the near-death experiences or the eternal light realms? The next quote says, wisdom is hidden in darkness. When lit by the flame of the soul, find thou the wisdom and be light-born, a son of the light without form. Seek thee evermore wisdom. Find it in the heart of the flame. Know that only by striving and light pour into thy brain. Now have I spoken with wisdom. Listen to my voice and obey. Tear open the veils of the darkness. Shine a light on the way. In that space where time exists not, faintly I sense the guardians of cycles. Move they only through angles. Free are they not of the curved dimensions. Strange and terrible are the hounds of the barrier. Follow thy consciousness to the limits of space. Think not to escape by entering your body, for follow they fast the soul through angles. Only the circle will give you protection. Save from the claws of the dwellers in angles. Entered I my body. Created the circles and know not angles. Created the form that from my form was formed. Made my body into a circle and lost the pursuers in the circles of time. But even yet, when freed from my body, cautious ever must I be not to move through angles, else my soul may never be free. End quote. Lift thine eyes to the cosmos, lift thine eyes to the light, speak in the words of the dweller, the chant that calls down the light, sing thou the song of freedom, sing thou the song of the soul, create the high vibration that will make thee one with the whole, blend all thyself with the cosmos, grow into one with the light. End quote. Thy light, O man, is the great light, shining through the shadow of flesh. Free must thou rise from the darkness before thou art one with the light. End quote. So here he does acknowledge the light within is the great light, and the body is shadow and darkness. The next one says, quote, the key to worlds within thee are found only within, for man is the gateway of mystery, and the key that is one with the one. Seek ye within the circle, use the word I shall give, open the gateway within thee, end quote. See, here's where I feel one may be led astray, as he later gives a mantra of words to use, while I strongly feel would not be a good idea to follow that advice. He talks about nine dimensions. This reminds me of the movie The Ninth Gate, based on the ninth gate of the Kingdom of Shadows. A few more quotes. He says, the book says, I know through darkness, though hidden in darkness, your soul, a spark of the true flame exists. Be ye one with the greatest of all lights. Find at the source, the end of thy goal. End quote. Quote, saw I that the cosmos is order and part of a movement that extends to all space, a party of an order of orders, constantly moving in harmony of space. Saw I the wheeling of cycles like vast circles across the sky. Know ye, O man, that all space is filled by worlds within worlds, I, one within the other, yet separate by law. End quote. Tell ye now the mystery of cycles that move in movements that are strange to the finite. For infinite are they bound knowledge of man, beyond knowledge of man. Know ye that there are nine of these cycles, I nine above and 14 below, moving in harmony to the place of joining that shall exist in the future of time. Know ye that the lords of the cycles are units of consciousness sent from the others to unify this with the all. Highest are they of the consciousness of all the cycles, working in harmony with the law. So also, although are the cycles of consciousness, children in different stages of growth, end quote. Next one, know ye, O man, that thy form is dual, balanced in polarity while formed in its form. Know that when fast on thee death approaches, it is only because thy balance is shaken. It is only because one pole has been lost. Know that the secret of life in Amenti is the secret of restoring the balance of poles. All that exists is form and is living because of the spirit of life in its poles. See ye not that in earth is the balance of all, earth's heart is the balance of all things that exist and have being on its face? The source of thy spirit is drawn from the earth's heart, for in thy form you are one with the earth. Four more short quotes. Quote, above the sky, like a rainbow of fire and sunlight, were formed the spirits. Sang they the glories of the Holy One. Then from the midst of the fire came a voice. Behold the glory of the first cause. I beheld that light, high above all darkness, reflected in my own being. I attained, as it were, to the God of all gods, the Spirit Sun, the Sovereign of the Sun spheres. End quote. Quote, darkness and light are both of one nature, different only in seeming, for each arose from the source of all darkness. Darkness is disorder, light is order. Darkness transmuted is light of the light. This, my children, is your purpose and being, transmutation of darkness to light. End quote. Two more. Quote, know ye are threefold in nature, physical, astral, and mental in one. Three are the qualities of each of the natures, nine in all, as above, so below. In the physical are these channels, the blood which moves in vortical motion, reacting on the heart to continue its beating. Magnetism which moves through the nerve paths, carrier of energies to all cells and tissues. Akasa which flows through channels, subtle yet physical, completing the channels. And the last one, quote, On earth, man is in bondage, bound by space and time to the earth plane. Encircling each planet, a wave of vibration binds him to his plane of unfoldment. Yet within man is the key of releasement. Within man may freedom be found. There's a Gnostic text called Zostrianus, which goes through the different types of the incarnate souls. I'm not going to read it, but know that there are different types of souls. Pisces Sophia says, quote, and if it hath not yet completed its number of circuits in the changes of the soul, or in the changes of the body, the Virgin of Light sealeth with it an excellent seal, and hasteth it to have it cast down in any month into a righteous body, which shall find the mysteries of the light. Be good, and go on into the light kingdom. If a soul hasn't reached the sufficient frequency, then it can't go on higher. It's a torturous process, and very few depart it. Most get buried in karma and more karma and never make it out. We go to a light. It's just a matter of how bright or pure the light is. White light is incoherent light because it is a wide spectrum that contains all colors, therefore not too pure. In our body, we are surrounded by darkness, the wormhole jettens us back to where we came down or higher, then all the heavens will seem lighted. The darkness is our tomb. Here's one from the near-death experience. It says, quote, one question I always personally had and that was answered is, are ghosts real? The answer I was given was yes. In the human body, there are two forms of spiritual being. One is the soul, which is the spiritual being that has a symbiotic relationship with the physical body. The second is the being created by the biology of the human body. This being is intelligent and is basically the personality of the individual. Its purpose is to provide for the human needs of food, hunger, survival, and procreation. This concept is very similar to Freud's id, ego, and superego, the division of mind and personality. The soul provides us with all the things of the individual that separates us from the animal kingdom. This is the ability to reason, use logic, or feel awe when seeing a sunset. The soul is the creative side of humankind. The second being is more our animal side and derives us to accomplish or pursue things to satisfy our needs and wants, end quote. Another one. So, I mean, a weakness that we need to be aware is that our consciousness is made to experience. We naturally want to experience things around us and start projecting outward, or we get caught up in a situation. Is it practicing discipline of the mind? Is curtailing thinking without focus or letting the mind wander? Setting an intention solid and following it is what propels us onward. So it's making sure your intention is right. We have that automatic behaviors where air creeps in due to not having intent on it. So we should try not to allow any reactions. Thoughts essential to our consciousness. Control thought is key. If your intent is to go back home, you will not want to stay, even to wake others up, and they are able to constantly create new souls. So hold the image and intent. Consciousness will follow, and it's only until we're out of the traps. I'm going to briefly mention soul contracts because I might have forgotten that in my last talk on the near-death experience. The near-death experience, where I interviewed and met the demiurge, had to agree to a contract before coming to Earth, and also the man who wrote me, who has had dreams about the demiurge since he was a child, remembers the contract as well. So here are a few other NDEers who mentioned soul contracts as well. Says, quote, "That was the contract I took on when coming into this life. You need to be high-spirited and what we call nowadays an upbeat person, because it is always about choice. I chose my husband David many years ago in the contract of my life to intervene into being more of a spiritual person, but we use that word too often, and realistically it comes down to being a loving person, of which our connection through every human being will always be the same." That was Jacqueline. Next one says, quote, "We had to go to the council meeting. I was allowed to be in that room, but not allowed to speak or interfere in any way. During the meeting, the master has asked for a decision to be overturned. That decision changed everything. Because of all the encounters that I had had and the impact upon my essence, it was determined that they would attempt an immediate reincarnation. They turned to me and told me that if I would agree to take on this new contract, I had to understand that I had been dead a long time by Earth time and had already ascended. They also shared with me that they had done this for others before me, but it was a very rare and extreme situation. I would have to be altered. They said even though they could not guarantee that I would survive on Earth if they did this, they told me I will suffer as any human woman who had my degree of traumatic death would suffer, but my healing would be greatly aided and accelerated through them if I would agree to the terms. Many discussions went around the council, the masters. Then they turned to me. Ultimately, I agreed." That was Marie W. The next one says, "Yes, life can only exist if there is death. Without death, there can be no life, so we enter a contract with God. And the terms and conditions include difficulties, challenges, and definite hardships. That is the experience we all signed up for. Take it head on, love it all. The whole point is not to know. The loneliness is what God meant to show you." End quote. That was Rachel E. Next one says, We ask to be born and we enter into a contract. We come to Earth with a purpose. On the other side, it is all that matters. Did we accomplish that mission or not? We are not judged by anyone, but we feel like a failure if we realize we did not accomplish the mission we incarnated for." That was Chantel L. Matt S. says, "I was made aware that there were things I had contracted to do that were still undone. Confirmation to me of reincarnation and contract incarnation. We pick our lives." End quote. The last one, Sherry H. said, "David and I and my sister Diana all made that contract with each other. Yes, the deceased in my experiences was included." End quote. This is a little bit about the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It says, "Remember the clear light, the pure clear light, white light from which everything in the universe comes, to which everything in the universe returns, the original nature of your own mind. the natural state of the universe unmanifest. Let go into the clear light. Trust it. Merge with it. It is your own true nature. It is home. I don't think I included it in this talk, but if you look at the near-death experiences and how they describe the soul, they describe it as translucent liquid light. And so like liquid, you can see through liquid. So, you know, they describe it as being the light as being transparent or see-through or clear, I guess. So the white light would not be that, right? White is incoherent light. Here's another one. Toby Johnson writes about what the clear light is on his website. He writes, quote, "The Tibetan Book of the Dead uses the convention of various colored lights as the entry to the different possible realms of reincarnation, called the six slokas, heaven, hell, human, hungry ghosts, angry gods, and animals, and the afterlife state called the bardo. For instance, you might see a smoky light off to the left and a bright white light beside it. These lights lead to the loka of hell. These lights look especially attractive if your karma is full of anger. If you enter there, you'll reincarnate as a denizen of hell. It will be hard to get out of there. You'll have to wait to be reincarnated as a human to ever get another try at Buddhahood. A dull red light leads to the loka of hungry ghosts. Red looks attractive to souls whose karma is full of attachment. A green light leads to the loka of the angry gods. It looks attractive to souls whose karma is full of jealousy. It's always better to choose the brighter light than the duller. But ideally, you won't choose any of these lights, blue, white, yellow, red, green, or rainbow, and so avoid reincarnation at all. If you can hold out long enough and pass all the way through the bardo, you can get back to the clear light. But most souls end up at a place where they see their old lives and get reattached to having a body and then inadvertently get reincarnated again. Indeed, before any of these colored lights were seen, you were given a chance to enter Buddhahood directly. That's what's called the experience of the clear light at the moment of death. What's clear light? It's not white light. White comes later. It actually leads to hell. And white isn't clear. It's white. Clear means you can't see it at all. You see right through it. The clear light that we're seeing through all the time throughout our lives is the light we're giving off ourselves. That is the light other people see us by. End quote. That was not me talking there. The next one talks some more about the clear light, primary and secondary clear lights. I'm going to skip over it. Here's one from near-death.com about the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It says, the first bardo comes at the very moment of death where there dawns the clear light of the ultimate reality. This is the very content and substance of the state of liberation. If only the soul can recognize it and act in a way to remain in that state. The instructions intended to be read at the moment of the person's death are designed to help him do this. He is told, first of all, to embrace the supreme experience not in a selfish and egoistic way, but rather with love and compassion for all sentient beings. This will aid him in the second step, which is to realize that his own mind and self is identical with the clear light, implying that he himself is the ultimate reality, the all-good Buddha, transcending time, eternity, and all creation. If he can recognize this while in the supreme state at the moment of death, he will attain liberation. That is, he will remain in the clear light forever. This condition is called the Dharmakaya, the highest spiritual body of the Buddha. Most souls, however, will fail to do this. They will be pulled down by the weight of the karma into the second stage of the first bardo, called the secondary clear light, seen immediately after death. At this point, there are separate instructions to be read according to the spiritual condition of the person while in life. For an individual advanced in meditation and other spiritual practices, there is repeated over and over the same instructions at the moment of death, enjoining him to recognize himself as the Dharmakaya. For a person who is still at a student level on the spiritual path, there is an injunction for him to meditate on his tutelary deity, that is, the particular god for whom he performed devotional practices while alive. Finally, if the deceased be of the common folk and practice in any spiritual disciplines, the instruction is to meditate upon the great compassionate Lord, which is to say, an avatar worshipped by the multitude, equivalent to Jesus as conceived by the average Christian. End quote. Dalai Lama says, quote, "We can say, therefore, that this ultimate source, clear light, is close to the notion of a creator, since all phenomena, whether they belong to samsara or nirvana, originate therein. But we must be careful in speaking of this source. We must not be led into error. I do not mean that there exists somewhere, there is a sort of collective clear light analogous to the non-Buddhist concept of Brahma as a substratum. We must not be inclined to deify this luminous space. We must understand that when we speak of ultimate or inherent clear light, we're speaking on an individual level. Likewise, when we speak of karma as the cause of the universe, we eliminate the notion of a unique entity called karma existing totally independent. Rather, collective karmic impressions accumulated individually are at the origin of the creation of a world. When, in the tantric context, we say that all worlds appear out of clear light, we do not visualize this source as a unique entity, but as the ultimate clear light of each being. We can also, on the basis of its pure essence, understand this clear light to be primordial Buddha. All the stages which make up the life of each living being, death, the intermediate state, and rebirth, represent nothing more than the various manifestations of the potential of clear light. It is both the most subtle consciousness and energy. The more clear light loses its subtlety, the more your experiences take shape. In this way, death and the intermediate state are moments where the gross manifestations emanating from clear light are reabsorbed. At death, we return to that original source, and from there a slightly more gross state emerges to form the intermediate state preceding birth. At the stage of rebirth, clear light is apparent in physical incarnation. At death, we return to this source, and so on. The ability to recognize subtle clear light, also called the primordial Buddha, is equivalent to realizing nirvana, whereas ignorance of the nature of clear light leads us to wander in the different realms of samsaric existence, end quote. And samsara is an allusion to them. In his book, The Psychedelic Experience, Timothy Leary compares the psychedelic experience to the different bardo states of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And in it, Leary keeps referring to an ego-based game life. In fact, he uses the word game over 100 times. Not only that, he has a book called The Game of Life. I was trying to decide if I want to read a couple of excerpts from The Psychedelic Experience, which he co-wrote with Robert Anton Wilson. The vision one, he says, the source, the first peaceful deity listed by the Bardo Thothol, which occupies the center of the mandala of the five. I'm going to skip that. Vision three is the fire flow of internal unity. And he says the first Bardo instruction is to keep you face to face with the void, ecstasy. Yet there are classes of men who have carried over karmic conflict about feeling. Inhibition, prove to uphold the pure experiences beyond feelings and slip into emotionally toned visions. The undifferentiated energy of the first bardo is woven into visionary games in the form of intense feelings. Exquisite, intense, pulsating sensations of unity and love will be felt. The negative counterpart is feelings of attachment, greed, isolation, and bodily concerns. Comes about this way. The pure flow of energy loses its white void quality and becomes sensed as intense feelings. An emotional game is imposed. Incredible new physical sensations pulse through the body. The glow of life is felt flooding along veins. One merges into a unitive ocean of orgastic fluid electricity. I think he's comparing it to the white light of the near-death experience. So the last quote says, the fact of the matter is that all apparent forms of matter and body are momentary clusters of energy. We are little more than flickers on a multidimensional television screen. This realization directly experienced can be delightful. You suddenly wake up from the delusion of separate form and hook up to the cosmic dance. Consciousness slides along the wave matrices silently at the speed of light. The terror comes with the discovery of transience. Nothing is fixed, no solid form. Everything you can experience is nothing but electrical waves. You feel ultimately tricked, a victim of great television producer. Distrust. The people around you are lifeless television robots. The world around you is a facade, a stage set. You are a helpless marionette, a plastic doll in a plastic world, end quote. So, the world around you being a facade, lifeless television robots, which sounds a lot like the television show Westworld, the series. If you haven't seen that, it's a good look into what this might be. And also, there was a movie brought to my attention. It was based on a book by Arthur C. Clarke called Childhood's End, and there was like a four-part television series mini-drama done on it. It's like a probably 3 hours or 4 hours maybe at the most. It's worth watching, too, because I won't give it away. But it's a lot like what I've been saying in my theory, and it was written like back in the 50s or 60s. Okay, here's the end of the talk. This is the consummation of the age and the apocalypse. The Gnostic text On the Origin of the World lays out an end-time scenario similar to the one my guest interviewee experienced. During his near-death experience, he met the demiurge, who resembled the being described in Revelations. My guest was shown a future earth after a time of darkness where everyone lived in harmony. The Gnostic text states, quote, "Before the consummation of the age, the whole place will be shaken by great thunder. Then the rulers will lament, crying out on account of their death. The angels will mourn for their human beings, and the demons will weep for their times and seasons, and their people will mourn and cry out on account of their death. Then the age will begin, and they will be disturbed. Their kings will be drunk from the flaming sword and will make war against one another, so that the earth will be drunk from the blood that is poured out, and the seas will be troubled by that war. Then the sun will darken and the moon will lose its light. The stars of the heaven will disregard their course, and great thunder will come out of great power, and that is above all the powers of chaos, the place where the firmament of the woman is situated. When she has created the first word, she will take off her wise flame of afterthought and will put on a rational wrath. Then she will drive out the gods of chaos, whom she had created together with the chief creator. She will cast them down to the abyss. They will be wiped out by their own injustice, for they will become like the mountains that blaze out fire, and they will consume one another until they are destroyed by their chief creator." That is, they'll feed off each other. "When he destroys them, he will turn against himself and destroy himself until he ceases to be, and their heavens will fall upon one another, and their powers will burn. Their realms will also be overthrown, and the chief creator's heaven will fall and split in two. Likewise, his stars in their sphere will fall down to the earth, and the earth will not be able to support them. They will fall down to the abyss, and the abyss will be overthrown." And here's the very end of that Gnostic passage, and it says, "The light is saved, and the Gnostics return home." It says, quote, "The light will cover the darkness and obliterate it. It will become like something that never existed, and the source of the darkness will be dissolved. The deficiency will be plucked out at its root and thrown down to the darkness, and the light will withdraw up to its root, and the glory of the unconceived will appear, and it will fill all the eternal realms. When the prophetic utterances and the writings of those who are rulers are revealed and are fulfilled by those who are called perfect, those who are never perfected in the unconceived Father will receive their glories in their realms and in the kingdoms of immortals, but they will not ever enter the kingless realm." End quote. So, on accepting and understanding the shadow, which is important, I've been thinking about how we are Sophia and have fallen in consciousness or frequency, and and we might actually be Lucifer too, in the sense that as Lucifer was said to have been with God in heaven but fell, Lucifer has also been said to be Venus, who has been a shadow or the dark side of Sophia. The word Lucifer actually means light bearer. Well, our souls, we are the light bearers or bearers of the light. This is all metaphorical. I'm not saying that we are Lucifer or anything like that. But Adam may be seen as the lower nature of man, and so it's Lucifer is telling man that the demiurge God was lying to him. So in one sense, Lucifer represents the fall of man, just as Sophia does. Now, I remember Manly Hall saying Lucifer represented the, quote, intellectual mind without the illumination of the spiritual mind, or enlightenment, and is therefore a false light. I think that parallels Sophia, who represents wisdom and knowledge, falling into chaos because she copied this realm without consulting or integrating the spiritual knowledge of the Ineffable Father. And of course, chaos is the attribute of Pan, or the devil, Satan, demiurge, darkness, shadow, or the opposer or opposite of the true God and the Ineffable Father. When we go externally outside ourselves, we are going into shadow or darkness. And when we keep the intent of our super consciousness internally within us, we are returning back to our true light power source. I think perhaps the intellectual mind may be analogous to the counterfeit spirit or Lucifer deceiving us. And maybe the spiritual mind is another way of naming the super consciousness. If you consider it from a propaganda control perspective, would it not be more likely that the form of Lucifer was created to negatively associate the form of light bearer, fallen angel, tree of knowledge, it's bad, by loading the word Lucifer with cross-referencing it with Satan and the devil, then by extension those forms have been imaged as bad. So when a Catholic hears fallen angel, they immediately think evil. It's just a word that means light bearer, and it can have a positive or negative connotation associated with it. I doubt a real being named Lucifer ever really existed. It's really more a metaphor to understand and accept our shadow side. So in this negative context, it can represent a false light or deception. I guess it all depends on the light it is bearing. If Lucifer is used to be associated with a fall, then that is the incoherent light or impure light. I guess right now in our fallen state of consciousness, it is not a pure light or currently in a pure form, but we bear the pure light inside us if we just go within and ignore all the external BS. To try and understand our shadow side, I see it as a tool used to better understand or know ourselves. For some reason, this divine drama or cosmic play has a villain and conflict in it. I don't think it's really their choice necessarily. They're just playing their role or serving their function, and maybe even AI characters. It is what they are, and it is not their fault per se, but it's a consequence of Sophia's error. So here in this dualistic polarity, you can't have a dawn without the night. You can't have light without the shadow or a point of perspective. I think it is perception and perspective. The shadow is there, but people need to change their perspective to focus on the light within and not on the shadow or darkness externally. So frequencies and octaves of spirits in dimensional planes. Probably the greatest brilliant scientist who ever lived was Nikola Tesla. And Tesla said, quote, "If you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration," end quote. And I think he's correct about this. We know there's an electromagnetic spectrum of energy that is classified by wavelength into radio waves, microwaves, X-rays, gamma rays, etc. There are theorized to be about 81 octaves in the EM spectrum. In chemistry, the law of octaves is about the pattern of elements in the periodic table, stating that when elements are aligned according to their atomic weight, every eighth element shares similar properties. Of course, evidence of octaves can be heard in our musical scales. Most people are familiar with the varying length of strings underneath the, or wires underneath the lid of a piano that cause the different notes we hear, and that the C major scale, for instance, as one moves their hands from left to right, repeats itself every eight white keys, albeit at a higher pitch, that is a higher octave. This can also be heard on a guitar as one moves one's fretting hand closer to the sound hole. As they fret the strings, making the length of the string, they pinch off shorter and shorter from the bridge, the pitch of the note becomes higher and higher. The wave that the string makes when vibrating is shorter. So it's all physics. Shorter wavelengths result in higher octaves. This helps to show that reality is frequency-based. To wake up or become awake, that's the next section. The importance of frequency with respect to consciousness can be seen when we go to sleep at night. During normal everyday activity, our brain waves are mostly in beta state, which is considered waking consciousness. As one becomes groggy or drowsy and tired, we start to operate and perform at a lower level. We become less focused and are forgetful and make mistakes. Then we go to sleep, we go into lower levels, such as alpha, theta, and delta, which are a lower frequency. At this point, we're almost unconscious. This is proof that we operate on consciousness and frequency. On a sliding scale, frequency directly affects the level of awakeness or consciousness in humans. If we had a consciousness knob that was like a volume 1, 0 to 4 hertz would be asleep, and each increase in hertz corresponds to realer, more awake levels. I venture to say that the brain wakes up at a lower frequency than our superconsciousness. This is a period when I first wake up and can drive, but it's more instinct. I notice the same features in seizures and anesthesia that both have no consciousnesses. Then there are successive waves of coming back to consciousness. It seems the seizure takes a little longer, but the generally build-up of frequency takes longer. That same volume knob has a pretend level of 100. We figure that is the end of the dial, but once we don't need the receiver or body to limit that volume control, it goes much higher than 100. This also means you can hold a superconsciousness in prison and hold it asleep, if you will, if held in the field of less than 4 hertz. Anyway, the near-death experiencers describe the superconsciousness as being awake compared to the state here, which is a lower consciousness, or like a dream state or being asleep. We sleep at night because our consciousness or brain state drops. We lose consciousness, so to speak. The average person probably has several dreams every night, which they usually don't remember. But then whenever we decide that we've had enough dreams or have slept enough or the alarm clock rings, we decide we have to go to work, we wake up or raise our consciousness to where we are aware or conscious. We dream at night and then wake up to a more real reality. It's interesting that the word wake as a verb means to rouse from apathy or ignorance. It's also interesting that the word wake also describes a ceremony for presiding over a dead person. It's even more interesting that the word wake are waves left behind by a vehicle traveling through water. Or in this scenario, the waves are brain waves. The vehicle is the soul, and the water is the firmament or above the firmament. They talk about the liquid light. We wake up when the frequency of the brain waves goes up or increase to a higher frequency. So whenever we've decided that we are through living enough lives or dreams, we can decide to wake up and go to a higher level of consciousness, a more real or true reality, just by raising the frequency of the waves our soul leaves as it travels through the astral etheric medium. To raise the frequency is to shorten the wavelengths, or to actually not move outward at all, but to move back inward to our source. Wake is a verb, to rouse or become roused from sleep, to become conscious or aware, is to hold awake over a dead person. The waves are tracked left by a vessel or other object moving through water. It's what our superconscious needs to do is just observe the dead or the sleeping, because it means to watch over the body of a dead person before burial. Anyway, as far as the exit strategy, check out how near-death experiencers describe the soul. I know it's common for them to call it translucent and that they could see through their light. Okay, not one of them describes the light of their soul as being white, from what I remember. They all use words like translucent or liquid light or iridescent or plasma. Liquid is see-through or transparent, clear. I think when the Book of the Dead is saying to recognize or enter the clear light right away, it's saying to go into your soul. It doesn't say the clear light. And I think it does say the clear light is your soul. The near-death experiences do not describe the soul as white light. How could it be? Why is all colors and is incoherent light? But white light is really just all the souls of the world. I don't want to be part of that. Here are how they describe the soul. Not one single one says it is white. Your soul is translucent light or plasma energy, which is imprisoned in the low frequency plane. It's trapped by the electromagnetic frequency generated by the heart. At death, the heart stops beating and the soul is released and starts increasing in frequency. There are low frequency entities called shadow beings that feed off our light energy, and they create illusions to engage our energy and attention. The chief of those low frequency beings is one who thinks he's God and who's all religions worship. At death, most souls are convinced to go to the light by a display of an alluring light and beings posing as angels or loved ones. When the soul is convinced it needs to reincarnate again to either perfect or make amends for past indiscretions, the soul needs to realize that these are all projections or illusions from within caused by the harnessing of our soul's light power. At death, the soul needs to stay focused and use its willful intent to raise its frequency back to its original high frequency level. The soul's an orb of light. It's a white translucent light made of plasma, perhaps. Think of it as a sun, in a sense. The soul's bright white light at the center, bright translucent light at the center, a very high frequency consisting of very fast, short wavelengths. As it radiates energy outwards, it slows down, drops in frequency into slower and longer vibrations. This results in denser, darker realities. We're technically everywhere at once, but the shadow beings or entities have managed to use our energy and get us to focus our attention on illusions and holograms that they create. Yes, we're temporarily trapped here on Earth by the electromagnetic prison of the heart, but at death, it's just a matter of redirecting our attention back inwards towards our true divine light source within, which is, say, back at the eternal light realms. Is analogous to a rubber band being extended or stretched outward, but then snapping back to its original natural resting position, or like holding a balloon underwater. As this happens, it'll probably feel like shooting through a wormhole or tunnel because the vibrations are getting shorter and shorter, faster and faster from the outside into a shorter radius or diameter as well. We're everywhere at once. It's simply an issue of where we choose to focus our attention. We can focus on illusions and projections of the archons or shadow beings, Or we can ignore the illusions and focus our attention on our true divine light source, which is at the internal light realms. The key seems to be that energy flows where attention goes. So ignore all and every distraction thrown your way and keep focusing your consciousness and intention on increasing your frequency back to the center. I think it might be a good idea for us to try to conduct a life review on our own and try to bring up as many memories and experiences, especially bad ones, as possible, and see if any triggers strong emotions one way or another. It would be important to process them over and over until one has let them go and feel nothing one way or the other about them, as if you're watching someone else's life or a show on TV. Forgive yourself and all others for any wrongdoings and just forget it, let it go. Let go of all the fear, regret, guilt, shame, resentment, anger, hate, jealousy, envy, even the happiest and best times. One should not hold attachments to them. No crying over happy times such as weddings, births, deaths, disagreements, partings, etc. I think repeating this life review over and over until there's no reaction whatsoever is important in case for some reason these memories or events are tried to be used against us as we ascend or incend. Also try to process things we never did that maybe we think we wished we had done, as these could be regrets that could hold one back and make one want to return. Using a meter or lie detector test to monitor the output could help, as they do like in Scientology. You could just look at the reading as one is reliving a memory or experience. And also think about your bad decisions that could have hurt other people or caused them harm, not just focusing on just our own feelings. Try to anticipate anything that they could try to use against us or use to manipulate us to get a reaction from us. In near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences, the soul seems to be able to travel in the astral plane by intent and thought, or will. I think it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, where, you know, the demiurge is behind the curtain playing off of our fears. And so when we go home, you just want to repeat, like, there's no place like home, there's no place like home, until we're back at home in the eternal light realms. So, if you have any experiences you'd like to share with me, I can be reached at the following email address, waynejbush@gmail.com. That's Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E, J, my middle initial, Bush, B-U-S-H, @gmail.com. So good night, positive thoughts, and higher frequency until we get home.